everyone, and welcome to Between the Sheets, episode 51. And we are discussing the week that was July 5th through July 11th, 1994. I am your host, Chris Zellner, joined as always by my co-host, Jack of All Trades, employee of many different wrestling and news, other MMA news and law news and all kinds of news websites, David Bix and Spam. Bix, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. Just finished writing a note to my secretary asking her to make sure she orders me certain pharmaceuticals that'll make sure my balls don't shrink. Not sure why she really needs to have a vested interest in that, but we'll talk about that later.
Well, yeah. Of course, this is 1994, which is the week of the trial, the Vince trial, where it starts. And we kind of called an audible. We'll talk about it later on the show. So that's the main reason why we don't have a guest is because we were planned for a long show and we decided we don't want to be here for 10 hours. So we'll talk about that when we get to the World Wrestling Federation segment later on. But
I thought about contacting Wade, but I think if we ever do anything like that, it should just be it would be like for a special episode of You Do an Exile or something.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's a lot.
Too much.
There's a lot. And Wade had the best coverage because he was there. And Dave leaned on heavily on Wade, you know, during that time. And so, but yeah, that's for later on the show. But, real quick, before we really delve into the show, I know that the hot topic of social media today that's on everybody's lips, no, it's not Brock Lesnar beating Mark Hunt at UFC 200, is Small Wonder, the television show. And Bix, I know that you were watching it earlier today as we record this, and you were blown away by what you saw.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long time since I'd really sat down and watched an episode. I mean, in part because I don't think it had aired anywhere in a long time until Antenna TV picked it up recently. But it was kind of transfixing because it's actually kind of better than you'd expect it to be. Like, have you watched it at all since it's been on Antenna TV?
No. The last time I saw it, it was on, oh, Jesus. It was on some random-ass channel a few years ago. For some reason, they were playing Small Wonder episodes. Why, I don't know. But it was on there. And that show, it was one of those weird shows because it was one of the early shows that was straight syndication and not a network show.
Yeah, it was first-run syndication.
But But that was not the first robot show. Because wasn't there another show that was on CBS that was a robot show? I think there was.
I can't think of this right. Am I Mother the Car?
No, in the 80s. At the same time period. It was not a small child. I think it was like an older child, like a teenager.
Whatever. I can't think of this right.
But this show went, I mean, this lasted for what, 4 or 5 seasons?
Small Wonder?
Yes.
Wait, was it really that long?
It had 96 episodes.
Is it 96 episodes or did it last 4 to 5 seasons? Because I mean,
it lasted 4 seasons.
The first run syndication could have been less seasons.
It went 4 seasons, 96 episodes. It went from September 7th, 85 to May 20th, 1989.
I did not realize that show lasted close to that long.
Yes.
I'm going to have to keep an eye on this on Antenna TV then. Because don't they end up ending it because she starts aging?
Yeah, pretty much.
The Wikipedia entry has C also. Oh, not quite human? Is that what you're thinking of?
No. There was another one that was on CBS. Well, I'm pretty sure it was on CBS. I cannot remember.
I was amazed that it was the Say No to Drugs episode, or Just Say No, however you want to put this.
Yeah.
And the pusher, there's a pusher who's trying to sell drugs to the robot, and then gives her the free drugs, because of course they do that.
I'm wrong. It was not another show like this. It was something else. Okay, but keep on going.
What were you thinking of?
I was thinking of another show, but it was actually, it was this same show, but when she got older at the end.
Okay. Jesus. Okay. I'm looking at Wikipedia too. I don't remember Vanessa, the evil robot who looks identical to Vicky, but does not speak in monotone.
Yeah.
But everyone who gets antenna TV, check out some Small Wonder. You'd be surprised.
You know her last acting role was, looking at Wikipedia, she was on Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
Tiffany Brissett?
Yeah.
So she would have been a teenager then.
Yeah, she would have been 17. Interesting show that was. But yeah, TBS aired it, I think.
Parker Lewis?
No, Small Wonder.
I thought it was all syndication. Wait a second.
I think it aired it at one point.
Great. Now I gotta look again.
I think it did air on TBS at one point.
CBS or TBS?
TBS.
Oh.
Yes.
Well, of course, TBS aired syndicated programming because it was the local station.
Yeah. So, Small One, I mean,
wait,
there were a lot
during the first run, you mean?
Yeah. No.
Reruns? No, I remember them airing reruns, yeah.
Yeah, reruns, yeah. So they aired on TBS, too. But there was, like, this weird... I mean, that's a weird era of, like, syndicated television shows.
Yes.
This has got me looking. There was 9 to 5. Remember that? With Sally Struthers? It was based off the movie?
Kind of.
9 to 5. Yes. Yeah, Sally Struthers was in there. God, who else was in there? So she was the only really name. Oh, because Rita Moreno was supposed to be in, she replaced her. God, what was the other ones? There's a lot of crazy first run syndicated shows in the 80s. So.
You Leave It to Beaver.
New Leave It to Beaver, although that was on TBS. I think that would have been a TBS direct
show. Was that exclusive to TBS, or was it a syndicated show that also happened to air on TBS?
I think so, yeah. So, okay. Yeah. So, there's a Wikipedia section, first run syndicated television programs in the United States.
Ooh.
Go check it out for a wild list of shows from the 80s and even to the 70s, and when it really, really started. So, yeah, go check that out. Check out some of those great shows from there. But anyway,
We got subcategories, and the first one at the top, because alphabetical order.
Action Pack. Which is our, you know, in our timeline of this show, actually. Bandit. Hercules.
Xena.
Tech War. William Shatner.
Cleopatra 2525.
Yeah.
Baywatch?
Baywatch wasn't part of that.
I know it wasn't part of the Action Pack, but it was first one.
No, Baywatch, yeah. Baywatch was one of those syndicated shows. Yeah,
Baywatch Nights?
Yeah, go check that out. And
Thunder in Paradise.
Of course. And which was airing in this time period. So
yes. So speaking of shows that aired on TBS.
WCW leads off tonight. And while officials from WCW were celebrating after the live WCW Saturday Night World Championship Wrestling show on July 9th, it ended a week filled with finger-pointing, and the celebration ignored all available numbers, indicating how the Hulk Hogan signing has worked. The group was put into a panic when just 2 weeks before the most important and most expensive show in its history, Bash at the Beach, the July 2nd, Saturday show did a 1.8 rating, and the Sunday main event did a 1.4, which was described as horrible. In addition, an attempt to track pay-per-view buys as of 9 days before the show indicated the number of advanced buys was virtually identical to its previous shows. Despite the hope for a match of the century bonanza on top, Hogan's presence and the major celebrity involvement, as well. Since most pay revives are done in the last 3 days, that isn't necessarily an indication of a disaster. As 1 week out, the first WrestleMania looked to be one of the wrestling's biggest disasters, but turned into his biggest success in history up to that point. But by no means can any of this be taken as good news. WCW officials are still hoping for and predicting a 1.0 buy rate, which will be a definite success, and believing there is a probability of a full house. The 16,000-seat Orlando Arena is being heavily papered, but our reports by The Observer are as 1 week ahead of time, there are only 6,000 seats left, which would be the company's largest live gate since Ric Flair vs. Terry Funk at the 1989 Great American Bash in Baltimore.
And I think that turned out not to be, though.
Yeah. However, no matter what the live gate, the show does a 0.55 or 0.6. Given the expenses and Hogan's price tag, that would be a total disaster, since it would mean the company is on the road to a six-month period where it will spend an additional $2 million and derive little return on that investment, because if Hogan doesn't draw well the first time out, it isn't going to get better as time goes on. Even a 0.9 on the first show would still mean Hogan and Flair would have to retain the entire audience for two more pay-per-views, probably without as much celebrity help, since Hogan called in all of his markers for this show, for the Hogan deal to be successful over the short run. If it does well, Hogan is expected to have more power bringing in people that bringing in his people. Considering the week TV numbers going in, which are not always but usually a strong barometer of a pay-per-view buy rate, there is more chance in the beginnings of the much-predicted multi-million-dollar disaster than a success at this point.
Now, do you remember what the buy rate was? I just looked it up.
0.8.
1.02.
Okay, so there you go. And you got to remember that we're still in the era here of pay-per-view where you're not ordering from direct to your device. You're still having to call.
Right. I mean, there were
pretty much.
I think by this point, my cable company might have had through the box ordering.
And it was starting. It was starting because DirecTV
just started.
It's the first year DirecTV been in existence, and yeah, and people more often than not would not call until the day of or day before the show.
Right. And well, and also at this point, a lot of people, if you didn't have HBO or Showtime or whatever, which is a lot more common back then, you may not have even had a cable box in the first place, because you didn't need a cable box back then with analog cable if you didn't have a premium.
No, the only thing you need a cable box for was for the premium channels.
Premium channels and pay-per-view. So maybe at this point, you may have still needed to rent the box just for the pay-per-view if you didn't have HBO or anything like
that. We didn't have a box, yeah. Well, in my house, we just had basic cable. And I would get the pay-per-views, you know, from a friend, but yeah, I mean, we didn't have that capability here until we got a DirecTV. So, yeah, I mean, and it was, you know, back then cable bills were considered high. I mean, now it's insane, but back then they were considered high if you did basic cable. I mean, premium cable.
Well, especially now that that box rental is so insane. I mean,
yeah, but back then I'm saying. Yeah, back then it was considered that high. Imagine, you know, people telling people now.
That, I know what I'm saying. Just for the box rental, though. I mean, it's like, I think Verizon's like $9 or $10 now per box.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a totally different era. And even though it was 22 years ago, it's just still totally, everything's different. But the deal about Hogan is Dave brings up the point about the celebrities. Yes. I mean, we'll talk about that as the show goes on, but he was really bringing out everybody he could get.
Yep. That, Mr. T, Shaq, good. Tiffany Brissett from TV Small Wonder.
You know, there's names we'll talk about later on, but they were trying to go all out here. And this was, you know, make or break the way it looked. Now, before the Saturday show, the week was filled with blame for one person or another for the bad numbers. While they've done a great job of creating the illusion that Hogan's popularity has never been stronger, thus far it only appears to be an illusion. Illusions spread long enough, and well, enough often turn into reality in this business. While this is not a valid reason for if the match draws or not, they have diluted the Flair-Hogan issue badly, with too much emphasis on Jimmy Hart and Sensational Sherry. Many have also blamed the snafu on Main Event, giving away the Clash results a few weeks back for ruining interest. A view that Dave doesn't buy for a second. Big,
well, let's talk about this.
Big tell everybody about that one.
It was the weekend before the Clash, I believe.
Yes.
where, by mistake, they aired the Bash at the Beach Control Center.
Yes.
Instead I remember of the that. Clash of the Champions Control Center.
Yes.
And the first thing is, you know, Hulk Hogan will be taking on a WCW champion, or unified WCW champion, Ric Flair, who, Clash of the Champions on Wednesday night defeated international champion Sting. Something like that.
I remember watching this and thinking, oh my God.
Now, was that the only match that was like dependent on a result? Because I think, well, they also announced the Arn and Dustin tag team, right?
Which yes.
Clash.
Yes.
Was there anything else that was Clash dependent in that control center?
Tag titles? I'm trying to remember.
I'm trying to remember how much they announced in advance. Because, you know, you could all... They didn't really try to explain it on TV. Like, you could have said, oh, there were different tapes made in advance because Mean Gene was going to be on vacation. They didn't do anything like that. Just when the Clash came around, Sting just mentioned Ric Flair's mind games in his promo.
It's WCW, everybody. That's all you can say.
But WCW made this type of mistake fairly often, all things considered.
Way too much. Once is too much, but way too much.
I mean, there was airing the wrong episode of World Championship Wrestling in 89.
Yes.
Multiple times where different segments aired out of order on shows.
Mm-hmm.
Including, let's see, there was when the Hollywood Blondes won the tag titles, I think they aired that out of order on WCW Saturday Night, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was the Jeff Jarrett dressed up as a Viano angle on Nitro or Thunder.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was this with airing the wrong tape. I feel like there are more. I feel like I'm forgetting a bunch.
Yes, I mean, it's crazy. It's
but
crazy
how this thing never happened on WWF television.
No, it did not. And as much as we talk about Kevin Dunn and, you know, the production, they never made these mistakes.
They ran a tight ship, yeah.
Yes. So, ugh, amazing. All right, WWE Day, high energy, not Owen Hart and Coco Ware, live show on July 9th, but the show was rushed and the needed killer live angle with Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan didn't appear to be killer enough.
No.
They spent the entire show pushing the 900 line, telling people to call and vote for two wrestlers that would appear in a main event. Now, young me did that and voted for Ric Flair and Sting. Reportedly, there were about 6,000 calls, grossing $12,000, about half of which goes to the phone company, which the company was thrilled out of its mind with, although Dave considers those numbers disappointing, with a constant hard sell throughout the show, since Jim Ross used to gross that much revenue when he did the hotline on an average Saturday. Latest word is that the company wants to do this gimmick regularly on television now, where fans pick the participants. If 45 minutes of television promotion time is only worth a few grand, somebody needs an economics lesson. Everyone knew in advance they were running Flair Sting on top, of course.
I wish you gave me a few seconds there so I could have made the TNA joke.
Make your joke.
No, just about, you know, well, TNA seems to be doing that just fine with what they're getting for their ads.
Yeah. Everyone knew in advance that they were running Flair and Sting on top, of course, and the show largely led the audience to pick Flair and Sting, which I did. So in reality, it was a scam. But supposedly the numbers represented on the screen picking Flair and Sting were legit. So there you go. There was no working the phone lines. The free live show for Hogan's first appearance at center stage. That's right. This is Hulk's first show here. Not only drew a full house of 785, but turned away about 2,000 people.
But that's all comps, right?
Well, let me talk more about this. All reports are that it was seeing Hogan for free and not the fact the show was airing live that was largely responsible for the crowd. Of those in the building, as many as half were a combination of families of employees, plants, and paid models to make sure the audience, quote, looked good, unquote, and reacted right, quote, unquote, since the building was said to be half full before fans were allowed in.
Let's stop for a second.
Biggs, please talk about this.
By looked good and, quote, reacted right, do they mean white people who did not chant, whoop, there it is?
Yes.
I mean, I guess it was also a little bit of fears of Hogan getting booed, too. But when you hear looked good, considering the things this company did, that's not what that makes me think.
You think those 2,000 turned away were a different color?
How often did you go to Center Stage around this time?
Not.
When did you go to Center Stage?
Just different points. But
never really a regular, just...
No. But the thing is, the thing is that... I mean... If you watch the television, you understood what we're talking about here. I mean, especially in this point, time, and place, because this is the era where Harlem Heat is really starting to get over with Center Stage fans because it's mainly a black crowd. Zuko Scorpio was always over in Center Stage for that reason.
Until he got fired for, what was it, testing positive for pot 3 times?
Yeah. So... And Center Stage is in an area of town in Atlanta where it's, you know, demographically, that's basically, you know, there's more black folks than white folks, put it that way. Even more.
Okay.
Yeah. It's free, you know, so this, I mean, and. I don't know. It's tough, but you know, TBS was wanting that aesthetic look. You know, they were wanting a more upper class looking crowd in their eyes.
Upper class, yes.
Yes, in their eyes, yes, upper class. You know, pay models, families of employees. You know, you wonder why they were sued.
You know, the stuff I've seen, that did not come up once.
No, it should have.
Yeah, it should have. Although the various people who talked about how they acted like, oh, we don't have black fans, that the black fans won't come to their shows. I mean, that's total bullshit. Because you look at a WCW crowd. I mean, any time, including during the
Center Stage wasn't paid, but you look at you look at Nitros, and I mean, God, I could tell you firsthand, being at the Omni and being at the Coliseum, being in Columbus at the this auditorium for those Nitro shows there, a good, you know, good strong percentage of non-whites were there.
Right. And I've never been to a WWF show where I felt like there was a substantial black portion of the crowd.
I'm sure probably up in the Northeast. Yeah. I mean, the WWF shows I've been to in Atlanta, different.
Yeah, well, no. Part of the reason I say that is I never went to any of the WCW shows at Nassau, You always used to hear stories about the crowd for WCW shows at Nassau Coliseum being different from WWF crowds. And as I've gotten older, I've always wondered if some of it was like coded racism, that it was like a rowdier crowd, and blah blah blah. And those who aren't from the area don't realize that. Nassau Coliseum is like right by a like heavily black town in Hempstead. So I've wondered, since I never actually went to any of those shows, if the people who were like, oh, is this different rowdier crowd and blah, 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 if that was really just kind of racist bullshit.
Could have been. But like I say, the other shows I've been to in Atlanta, it's, you know, pretty much the same type of makeup. Because black folks love wrestling. I mean, it's always been that way here, I know of. I mean, going way back. So, you know, they'll go to whatever's around. You know, my local shows I go to here in my town. Just went to one Saturday evening where, you know, I'd say a good out of the 250 so fans, I'd say a good 35 to 40% were black, you know. I mean, and the town I live in is kind of a kind of almost 50-50, I think, split, and it may tilt more towards black population here. So I mean, they'll come out for sure. And if I'm a promoter, I don't give a damn what color you are. All I care about is your money, you know. So It's just that's corporate bullshit right there, basically what it comes down to.
Yes.
That's corporate bullshit that, you know, you want this look and you're trying to, you know, you're trying to go for a, you know, crowd that's, you know, you could sell your product to advertisers.
Yep.
You know, that's one thing that wrestling has always had the stigma of is its fans, whether it be, you know, rednecks or, you know, black folk or whatever. You know, if it's not meeting the certain requirements of what an advertiser looks for, you know, where they want their product to be aimed at, then, you know, that's where the wrestling gets a stigma from. So a lot of the talk that you'll hear, you know, about wrestling fans, I'm pretty sure in the mass media, it's either, you know, I wouldn't say necessarily coded racism, but it's definitely coded culture, put that way. You know, it's definitely, I'm better than you, highbrow versus lowbrow. You know, it's class warfare. Let's put it that way. Yeah, wouldn't you agree
also,
with?
Yeah, and also like all the lines, the jokes within wrestling about whatever it is about the first row at the Mid-South Coliseum. You know, what has, you know, X teeth. You know,
yeah,
you know, whatever IQ, that whole thing.
And you got guys like Colin Cowherd to this day, you know, calling wrestling fans booger eaters and. You know, Jim Rome makes fun of wrestling fans. But God, these guys are all, you know, sucking Dana White's cock for UFC.
Now, remind me, which wrestling death controversy was Colin Cowherd? Was that Eddie Guerrero?
Yes. And that's why when Punk went on the show, people were making a fuss about it. That Punk would go on this guy's show after when he was saying about Eddie Guerrero. So, I mean... But it's changing. Let's put it that way. It's changing a lot. I mean, John Cena's hosting the fucking ESPY Awards. ESPN is giving time to WWE every week on programming. So the view is changing because it helps to have a lot of your personalities actually be fans. So that all that stuff's changing out, and we're getting better. But, yeah, I mean, you can see the stigma of being a wrestling fan. You know, from back in the 90s, how it was.
Yeah.
Even down here.
Yeah. It changed a lot, though. If I ever mention to people now, like, about, like, writing about wrestling or whatever, they're like, oh, that sounds fun. I mean, it's different. It is definitely different now, but we're almost half an hour in, so let's get back to how black people love Mr. T.
This may explain part of the strong face reaction for Hogan. And particularly the surprising reaction to Mr. T.
Actually, wait a second. No, it's white people love Mr. T.
Yeah. Those who arrived even 2 hours early were turned away because the lines were so long and so few seats were available to fans. They taped two more Saturday shows after the live taping ended, although at press time, we don't have news on those shows.
Wait, they did taping for 6 hours of TV?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Well, maybe not, because this is Brave season.
So, oh, yeah, that's true. Was this show an hour or 2 hours?
This was an hour show.
Okay. So that's not too bad.
No. They only left about 7 minutes of airtime for the Flair Sting match, which was, I hated that. And post-match angles and interviews with Flair and Sherry Hogan and Mr. T to close the show. While Flair took one bump after another, for the brief time he gave himself in the ring, the thing was way too rushed, and Sting... once again came out of the show as the odd man out. Sting put the Scorpion Deathlock on at 4:20. Interesting timing. When Sherry Martel, dressed up as Charlie Chaplin in a suit, ran in and manhandled a male ref, throwing him out of the ring, face raked, and then incapacitated Sting. Folks, let me stop right now. This is a pet peeve of mine. Bix, you know this. You know how people always talk about the WWE lingo of incapacitated?
Yes.
Being one of Vince's favorite words.
Sure.
I've been watching a shitload of 1988 Jim Crockett Promotions television lately. Mm-hmm. Jim Ross says incapacitated on every single show.
Well, you know what? It makes me... I've thought about, too, how medical facility, I always thought, came from Jim Ross. I mean, I think that's stuff that went to WWE via Jim Ross.
And... Jim Ross saying sports entertainment a lot on these shows, too. It's always interesting in 1988 NWA.
Really?
So, yes. Yes.
Also, before we go ahead a little bit too, so what they ended up doing was that Sting ended up being out of Bash at the Beach in his match against Regal with an eye injury from Sherry gouging his eye.
Yes.
And do you know where I'm going with this?
Go ahead.
Sting ended up working the house shows with an eye patch on.
Yes, he did.
Before Bash at the Beach.
And this seemed to me as a way for Hogan to get Sting off that show.
It was really weird. Like, I remember when I saw, like, in the newsletters, when I saw the house show reports after Bash at the Beach had happened. Huh?
Yeah, Sting definitely should have been on that show, but...
I mean, he was main eventing those house shows against Austin, wasn't he?
Yes. Sting, U.S. title stuff, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Wasn't he? And, yeah, there's no way in hell Sting shouldn't have been on that show, but Hogan cannot let Sting upstage you. God damn it. And if you don't know who Charlie Chaplin is...
Oh, wait. Are we at the point where people might not know who Charlie Chaplin is?
Bix, we're in 2016. I mean, there's people probably listening to this show that don't know who Charlie Chaplin was.
Do a Google image search for Charlie Chaplin.
Charlie Chaplin was a silent movie comedy star who had the Hitler mustache before Hitler and was a mega star around the world. But yeah, do a Google search on Charlie Chaplin. You'll see why Dave made that remark.
Although I believe she had a goatee and not a mustache.
Yes. They went smarter with that. All right, earlier in the show, Sherry was barred from the arena. Hence, watch you look. Try to sneak in dressed as Fifi in a funny and creative skit, which didn't air live. And in actuality, it took 5 retakes to get it right, though only a blind man couldn't see the man interfering with Sherry. How about that? Sherry dressing as Fifi.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah. And I'm curious to wonder why they didn't air that, other than the take problem.
No. I think he's not saying it didn't air. He's saying it
That's right.
Air.
It did air on television.
He's saying it just wasn't live.
It wasn't live. Yeah, there you go. That's right. Yeah. All right. Hogan ran in an atomic drop Sherry, which she barely sold. A Hogan atomic drop should have at least knocked the woman down for a lengthy period of time.
Has Dave ever seen a Hogan atomic drop?
He saw a bunch of them. And the whole idea of this is questionable at this point in time anyway. He then pulled off her wig, revealing who she was. Flair clipped Hogan's knee and got a few seconds of advantage for Mr. T, who got a surprisingly big pop, and Jimmy Hart made the save. Although I'm sure Mr. T is a tough guy and has that great scowling face to people to believe it, it does nothing for your product when your world champion at top heel, 1 week before the match of the century, runs away from a 160-pound manager and a has-been actor. I guess... T must have been threatened by forcing him to watch old A-Team episodes, and that would scare anyone. Yikes! I liked A-Team! Come on, Dave.
It had Harry Smilak.
Yeah, I guess Dave wasn't a fan of Dirt Benedict. Earlier in the live show...
Oh, wait, have we ever heard Dave's thoughts on Body Slam? Have we? I feel like it came up on Iyata once.
It probably did. Earlier in the show, in the live show, Dustin Rhodes and Arn Anderson... beat Steve, this is how Dave words it, Steve, quote, George Washington, unquote, Kern and Bobby Eaton, bad attitude in 3:22, when Rose pinned Eaton with a bulldog in a typical squash with good action, but too short to mean anything. Biggs, describe the bad attitude gimmick.
So one day, Steve Kern comes out, like, pointing to the Fabulous Ones, like, tuxedo-type outfits. And talking about what they mean without ever saying the words Fabulous Ones. And how he's looking for a tag team partner. And then it ends up being Bobby Eaton. And I don't know if there was some legal thing or whatever, but they end up being Bad Attitude instead of the Fabulous Ones. And this did not last long at all.
And I thought they totally wasted that, because I thought that could have been a good little deal.
I mean, Kern looked really old, though, because of the state of his hair at the time.
Yeah, he probably should have just went ahead with the full shave. But I thought Kern and Eaton could have been, you know, tag champions or something. I mean, hell.
There's no way he could have gone with the full shave. Ric Flair was booking.
Ricky Steamboat, Pentex Slasinger.
Yeah, they were a good team, though. I mean, they were a good
team.
Yeah, Kern also had that really good main event on WCW Saturday Night with Sting that one time, too.
That's right, yeah. Ricky Steamboat, Pentex Slasinger in 146. And a match with Marcus Bagwell and the Patriots, Stars and Stripes, versus Paul Roma and Paul Orndorff. Pretty wonderful. Went a scant 159 before the Sullivan brothers came out, Evad and Kevin, distracting Roma, who was pinned from behind by Bagwell. This appears to be setting up Bagwell and Patriots title contenders if and when Roma and Orndorff take the straps.
And it did.
Yeah. The show also featured a Hogan interview, bring up the celebrities. Shaquille O'Neal, George Foreman, Mr. T, and Hank Aaron. So the attempts of Mike Tyson, Sylvester Stallone, and Wesley Snipes fell by the wayside, but it's still by far the most impressive celeb list at a wrestling show in several years that will be in Orlando.
Oh, take that, Burt Reynolds, Jenny Garth, Rhonda Shear, Donnie Wahlberg. Was there anyone else at that show, at WrestleMania 10?
Marla Maples?
No, she wasn't at WrestleMania 10.
God, I can't remember.
I remember that there were no celebrity guests at WrestleMania 9.
Yeah.
So take that, Burt Reynolds, of TV's Evening Shade.
Now, we have this Hogan interview, do we not?
Yeah, so we probably should have done this segment by segment, but I guess let's go with the Hogan interview for now. Listen to them sweetening that crowd audio even on a live show.
No, man.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we are awaiting the arrival of Hulk Hogan.
That theme song. Listen to that pop.
My Jimmy Hart pet peeve during this era is that he would just start using the comeback into the school because it's the end of recess alarm on the megaphone all the time.
Yeah. Oh, and now we know.
What?
Now we know what, I just thought about it. We know why there weren't as many black fans in the arena, because it's Hogan. You know, you have to make a certain amount of money a year for Hogan.
Yeah, you got to be a basketball player, like Shaq.
Yeah, exactly.
Back to
Hogan.
Well, his black friend's coming in later in the interview, too.
Yes.
Coming up a week from tomorrow night on pay-per-view, the biggest match in professional wrestling history, the Bash at the Beach, you one-on-one with Ric Flair for the WCW heavyweight title, Hulkster.
Well, let me tell you something, Mean Gene. The fact that Hulk Hogan is here in the WCW, this is the biggest day in my life, the biggest day in my career. And now that Ted Turner has put his seal of approval, now that his words are etched in stone, this is the number one wrestling organization in the world, brother. And all the maniacs know that, dude.
Amen.
Makes me want to vomit.
And as far as next Sunday goes, July 17th, the Bash at the Beach. One man, one belt, one title, one world heavyweight champion, brother. That match will be the one that the whole world watches, brother. All the Hulkamaniacs on the inside, the thousands of them. All the thousands of Hulkamaniacs on the outside of the building, brother. And all the millions upon millions of Hulkamaniacs all over the world watching their TVs will see one winner, one loser, and one world's heavyweight champion, dude.
You know, I should point out, just for the record, Sensuous Sherry is barred from the building.
Sensuous, that's right.
I understand she will be in Orlando.
Well, you know something, brother. When Ric Flair said he was the dirtiest player in the game, we realized what he was talking about. And when Sensuous Sherry came out, we saw that Ric Flair was his, that Sherry was his down card. But let me tell you something, brother. My prayers have finally been answered, brother. We will have Ric Flair in Orlando. But tonight, the WCW, Eric Bischoff, and Interactive Wrestling is the cutting edge, brother, of the wrestling business. Tonight, all the media, Jimmy Hart, dial that phone number for me, brother. Tonight, the Hulkamaniacs have a chance to call in and decide who they want to wrestle tonight. And as far as the main event goes, Jimmy, give me that number. I want to see Ric Flair wrestle Sting tonight, brother.
That's of course you do. Because you want Sting out of the pay-per-view.
That's not how that works. Because Sherry's barred from the building, I don't think Ric Flair's got any interest in... Wait a second. So did he... Was he pressing buttons? I don't think he was.
Well, how about... Was that the first time Eric Bischoff was mentioned as... And I wouldn't say as like a boss, but his name was mentioned like that on camera?
Maybe. I think so. Because I think the first time I actually remember it was when he was when they did the Hogan injury angle at the Clash in August.
Yeah.
Wrestling. Well, brother, I don't care what Ric Flair wants. That's what's so cool about this thing, brother. The Hulkamaniacs can make a difference. Even without Sherry here, we can put Ric Flair in the ring against Sting, brother, and he's got nothing to say about that. Absolutely right. If you do vote for Ric Flair, he'll have no choice but to get in the ring and meet Sting, so keep that in mind as you make those telephone calls.
You know, we got the Shaq Attack in Orlando. We got George Foreman there, brother. We got Hammer and Hank, who's taught me how to hit a home run with Ric Flair's head. But the one thing that I got now in my corner, the one man watching my back, the man that knows how to bite, scratch, claw and fight for what he believes in, and that's the training, the prayers, the vitamins. That man is here with me tonight, brother. He is the best street fighter in the world, and that's my main man, brother, Mr. T, brother.
Ah.
Odin's friends that he's bringing in are all black dudes too.
I know.
The right kind, though, not the kind that clutters up Center Stage Theater.
I know.
Stop doing that. I gotta skip ahead. I'm sorry. Why did he do that all the time?
I don't know.
The audio just cut out.
About
there we go.
Having the deck stack, brother. When you talk about having a down card, brother, we're not worried about sneaky Sherry anymore, brother. If any of your friends want to come out from the back during the bash at the beach, if any of your friends want to try to interfere in my match with Ric Flair, I've got the maniac mugger here, brother. I can put him at ringside, but he's going to be hovering the Orlando Arena. And I pity the fool that gets in your way, brother.
I think he wants to use a different G-G-E-R word.
You, brother. Wherever you go, I'll be there. We're going to take control of the WCW. You better look out. Sensational Sherry, whatever your name is, Sneaky Sherry. You better look out. Anybody that try to take care of business, you know, sneak you from the back, that's my job. You take care of the business in the ring, I'll be patrolling the outside, up in the balconies, in the alleyways, taking care of business. Don't worry about nothing. I got you covered.
And what you going to do, Ric Flair? What you going to do, Ric Flair, when the largest arms in the world in Hulkamania run wild on you? I pity the fool.
Oh, stay tuned. We're back.
Oh. Oh. Oh, that song.
So beneath the mohawk, underneath the tough-talking persona, and behind the bad attitude, is an old-fashioned mama's boy who just...
I'm sorry.
What the hell was that?
I decided to start playing him talking about his mama.
But anyway, wow. Oh, yeah, Hogan clearly... Maniac Mugger and Hogan clearly wanted Sting in that match to get him off the pay-per-view. But speaking of the Sting and Flair match, we have the results announcement of that, and
yeah.
Why you gotta tell everyone the people that would make up the heel locker room during this fix?
I'm trying to remember. So we've got Terror Rising. No, we've got John Paul Levesque dressed as Terror Rising.
Yes.
Who else?
You need to watch it. Get the play by play.
Okay. So wait, are we going to the announcement? Or are we going to?
Yeah, go to the announcement.
Okay.
With you live on WCW.
What is going on with this?
Saturday night, Tony Schiavone, Mean Gene Okerlund, Bobby the Brain Heenan. Brain, you can hang up the phone right now. The final tabulations are in.
Tabulations are in, and ladies and gentlemen, as I said before, you can sit back and watch your vote count. Let's take a look. Let's take a look at these numbers that are up right now, Tony.
All right, Sting with 60% will be in the match. Ric Flair has 57% of the total votes in the red locker room. Therefore, it will be Sting against the Nature Boy Ric Flair in just a few moments.
Now, quick question. Remember them doing one of these interactive shows, obviously not this one, where they didn't think about that they were... They acted like the votes were coming out of the same hole, and it was like, the babyface gets 55% and the heel gets 45%. Does that sound familiar? Someone thought that the numbers had to add up to
vaguely
when they didn't have to.
Vaguely, yeah.
I mean, it sounds like a very WCW thing to do.
Of course.
Here live on WCW Saturday Night. What's wrong? You're sweating. What's wrong?
It goes against all that's right. You don't dictate to the heavyweight champion of the world and the humanoid say he's got to get in the ring. Why? Because Hulk Hogan is behind it. Open your eyes, both of you. You people out there, don't you see what's happening?
I do. It's time to get, let's get Sting in the ring. One of the participants.
That rhymes.
Sting in the ring. Oh, we got here Sting's music. I ain't heard this music in a while.
No, I'm not. No man called
Man, call Sting.
He does this.
And then, but Flair in the heel locker room is yelling at young Jean-Paul Levesque, which is funny to watch.
Bischoff is back with a...
What is going on with this video?
Very irate, distraught world heavyweight champion. Let's see if we can't get in touch with Eric.
Vader's back there too.
Yeah, wait. So who do we have here? We have Terry Funk, who's talking with Harley Race. Steve Austin.
Yes.
Jean-Paul Levesque.
Yeah.
Colonel Parker, Ming, Vader. Maybe one or two. Baby Pretty Wonderful.
Yeah, that's a hell of a heel locker room.
Oh, and Buckhouse Buck.
That's a hell of a heel locker room there.
And Ric Flair is losing his mind. Sting is in the ring. We are live. Ric Flair is on his way, like it or not.
Hey, pause it real quick.
Also, I believe this is one of those times where Vader is wearing the singlet top backwards.
Yeah. I wish they would have gave the option of just have everybody there and you just vote for the two people you want to see. Because I definitely would have voted Ric Flair versus Terry Funk.
Oh, that it wasn't locker room A, locker room B.
Could you imagine if they did something like that and it ended up, you know, they were going to do a shoot deal and it ended up being like Ric Flair versus Terry Funk?
Why didn't you vote for Sting and Terry Funk? Or who are the other baby faces?
The other baby faces would have been the Stars and Stripes. Or they already worked.
Cactus Jack? Or was he not here?
Oh, Johnny Bad.
Well, let me look at the other video.
Johnny Bad was in there. Pillman?
Yes, Pillman with the... I think this is when he first started to get the hair extensions.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I see Guardian Angel.
Yes.
Pillman.
Yeah.
Let me see.
Johnny B. Badd.
Evad.
Evad Sullivan.
I see someone wearing a head. Oh, Jungle Jim Steele.
Jungle Jim Steele.
Who is
That's for Terrorizing. Yeah.
Right, he was theoretically the one, I guess, that's matched up with Terror Rising.
Yeah, and so Guardian Angel would have been, what, Vader?
Yeah, it's weird that everyone kind of has a specific... Well, that's right, everyone was demanding an opponent that they wanted to face, that's right.
And Buck and Funk would have been, what, the Sullivans?
Yeah, Johnny B. Badd was...
Austin.
And Pillman was...
I don't know.
Wait, who are we missing? What other who are the heels?
Funk, Buck, Vader. Was Regal in there?
He wasn't in there at the end, but I think he might have been.
Regal may have been in there. So maybe Regal and Bad. And then Pillman and Austin.
Yeah.
That makes more sense.
Okay.
So anyway, yeah, I mean.
Do we want to play the finish of the match?
Sure. Play the finish of the match with Sherry. Yeah, let's play the finish. Let's let everyone hear the Sherry incident.
Ric Flair! Sting is... We got a fan!
We got a fan!
We got a fan coming in here! We need Doug Dillinger to get this fan out of the ring! Oh my goodness! Gouging the eyes of Sting!
weighs about 150.
Who is this person?
Weighs about 150 pounds.
Hulk Hogan. Who is this guy?
I don't know, hon. Shivani, who he is?
Who is this guy?
The guy with a goatee. I don't know. He's somebody that got fed up with Sting. He got fed up with Hogan.
Oh, wait a minute.
Who is this guy? Oh, wait a minute. It's Sherry. It's Sherry.
The best part is when she takes off the mustache before the goatee.
Yes.
Sherry.
Sherry. Sent you a Sherry dressed up like a man in the ring.
Flair tries to chop Hogan, but Hogan's moving out of the way. Not realizing that Flair were...
Yes, that was a great moment.
I don't think I ever noticed that before.
Yeah, it is hilarious.
And Flair attacks Hogan from behind.
Got him in the knee.
Sting was gouged in the eyes, and now Hogan.
Set the bigger foot on him. Break his leg. Break it on live time.
Ric Flair, along with...
Okay, so you get the idea.
Yeah. Heenan still was caring back then. Kind of,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that was a wild show. Although that wasn't the best. The best live WWE show that they did was, they of course went with Sunday. I remember they did it as a main event. The Sting Avalanche one was the best one, I thought.
Is that the one where they just put black signs over where it said Saturday Night on the
Yes. Yeah.
So it just said WCW and then there were just black rectangles?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
As far as the live matches go, that was the best one.
The second time they did, they did do customized signs for main event. But yeah. Wait, that was Sting and Avalanche, and what else was on that show? Is that the one with Arn Anderson and Brian Armstrong?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, that was a good show. All right, back to this. On television, Hogan appeared to be loudly cheered, although from live reports, there were noticeable boos, and we won Flair chance during his first interview. Probably 80% of the phone calls here after the show were negative. Well, our reports for the company were that they were thrilled. That may do more to explain the status of the company than anything else. Hogan has appearances this week on Regis and Kathy Lee on July 11th and Jay Leno on July 12th. And the trial in a busy week leading to the match. WCW's more than double the usual ad budget was reflected in buying spots of syndication for Bash of the Beach on many WWF superstar shows, which must have thrilled those in Titan. Revenge. Ah, they're about to get you, didn't it, boys? When they used to buy all that shit, their time on Turner.
It took five, 6 years, but...
And check this out. Another thing I've been watching on this 88 Crocker stuff, They would splice in. And you remember how they used to do in New York, like when the Championship Wrestling Florida would show, And you would get the promos for the Garden.
Right.
On this, I'm watching. This is based out of Boston or Worcester, Mass. Area. You would get the WWF Control Center deal hyping the Centrum House shows during World Championship Wrestling broadcasts.
Wait,
how about that shit? How about that? Yes, I never knew that happened anywhere, but here it is. I've been watching it lately. Yeah.
This would be during which syndicated shows?
No, during TBS. During
World Championship local Press? Local cable company spots for the event center?
Yes. Yes.
But they were event centers? They weren't.
Yeah, Sean Mooney with the promos.
How long were the spots?
The normal amount, the normal.
They took up the whole break.
Not the whole break, no. Just
they
enough,
were like 3 minutes.
I don't know, but it was weird. Anyway,
Wait. This is the stuff that Rich Palladino taped, right?
Yeah.
Well, someone in the New England may or may not. Whatever. Right. But yes, didn't he change the channel occasionally during some shows?
It could have been.
But it was always
placed during World Championship Wrestling.
Okay.
All right. But anyway, Hogan was on Regis and Kathy Lee, and Hogan was on for less than 5 minutes. This is the first time Ted Turner has ever come out and actually signed a big match, Hogan said. If I win this title next Sunday night, it will be the sixth time I'll be heavyweight champion of the world, and Hulkamania will live forever. Kathy Lee said she didn't know there were two conferences in wrestling.
Oh, I remember that.
Regis asked Hogan how big his arms were, and he said, bigger than yours, Regis. That's all that matters. Holt mentioned that Shaq, George Foreman, Mr. T were celebrities involved in the event. He concluded with, quote, so all of a sudden wrestling's cool again.
Regis said that or Hogan did?
What?
So all of a sudden wrestling's cool again.
Hogan.
Okay. Wonderful.
Two conferences. Kathy Lee, everyone. And no, she was not drinking on this show. All right. Non-Hogan WCW news. Get ready, Bix. There will be numerous changes on the wrestling hotline as Mike Tenay was asked to do a second date and Mark Madden was added. Thank you. Although we're not certain who will be replaced. We've heard conflicting reports on the status of Bobby Heenan. Although it appears he'll remain on Sundays, Madden would now be put on Wednesday rather than Sunday, which is Jesse Ventura's spot. Gee, I wonder why that's going on. Tenay was asked to do Monday, which is Gordon Soley's spot. Gee, I wonder why that's going on. Apparently, Madden, who's moved to being the WWE Hotline employee, supposed the end of his newsletter column, was told he'd have to submit either a complete script or an outline of a script of what he would be saying ahead of time before going on the air. Hmm. Gee, where have we heard that before, Vix?
Yeah, I can't place it. Sarah Shands, what was that, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah.
Did you ever call the WCW hotline during
no,
all this?
I did not ever call any of the 900.
Yeah, I never did it either. Never did it either. I always wanted to, but I knew I would get in trouble. So.
Did you have Talking Yellow Book in Atlanta, though?
Well, I don't live in Atlanta.
In the Atlanta metro area?
I don't know, but I never
Come
dialed
on. I know you don't live in Atlanta. You know
the only number I actually dialed, other than that Flair Sting deal, which that was, you know, what it was Joe Pedicino got his own little hotline on the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's hotline deal. They had a 511 service.
So wait, was this pay or was this free?
It was pay.
But it was like a 9 cents, 40 cents a call type of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 50 cents a call. And this lasted for a good two or three years. It went from like 95, 96 to 98. Mm-hmm. And I would call up here what Pedicino would say. But yeah. We didn't have any Dominic Valentis here. So, although Dominic's free, right?
Well, it's a local call or long distance call. But did you have Talking Yellow Book at all?
I don't know.
The thing that was advertised in the phone, the phone book company ran.
I mean, we may have. I don't know. I never really fooled with it.
Well, it was. Do you remember ever hearing Cody Boyens?
No. Okay. No. All right. Supposedly, the word has come directly from the top that the heavy blood, violent matches, such as the two Cactus Jack matches from the pay per views,
any blood,
and the Dustin Rhodes Bunkhouse Buck first match are no longer going to be tolerated, even on pay per view. The fear is with the national and congressional mood against violence on television that Ted Turner, a major public figure who has to be in step with the times, doesn't want to be caught with an Achilles heel. Since Vince McMahon has also come down hard on the same subject, McMahon must be afraid that unless wrestling is toned down, a spotlight will shine on him as well. WCW's television is already edited to death in Europe, where the standards on television violence are already stricter. As someone who enjoyed those three matches, this is Wade Keller talking. As someone who enjoyed those three matches, I don't like this direction. But I also realize that to survive in the business in 1994, you can't ignore the outside world. All the complaining about how it used to be doesn't mean diddly if it's going to end up costing exposure in the business, in which exposure is the foundation.
Okay. How do we give context to this in 2016? I mean, I'm trying to think, because this was a big Janet Reno thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, they were going to video games. They were going after, some of the stuff on television. NYPD Blue was a part of this.
Well, not necessarily as much for violence, NYPD Blue.
Yeah, for nudity, but still.
No, but, I mean, the ones that were getting targeted, especially were, I guess, Power Rangers as far as kid shows. Right?
Power Rangers, correct.
Law and Order to a degree.
Law and Order, yes.
Michael Moriarty ended up quitting Law and Order because he thought they were kowtowing to Janet Reno.
Yes.
Famously.
Michael Moriarty, just a complete nut job.
Losing, yeah, he was also kind of losing his mind.
Great Reservoir Dogs, though. But,
Who do you prefer? Are you a Ben Stone fan or are you a Jack McCoy fan?
I like Moriarty anyway, just because he's Michael Moriarty. I just thought he added something there. But I mean, Law and Order is a great show no matter what.
Yes.
I mean, it's consistently been a great show for all these years. And it's, you know, with all the different changes and stuff, but yeah. And it's got the wrestling connection with Richard Belzer too. But
yeah, I guess that is a wrestling connection.
But yeah, I mean, if you didn't live in this era, you don't understand basically the whole deal about violence on television,
also the
violence,
Europe thing.
In movies.
I was gonna say for the Europe thing, for those who don't know, in the UK, I guess it's still this way to a degree. If they want to have the nostalgia, but I think at this point they're just using the same name everywhere. For a long time, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles in the UK.
That's right,
There was this stigma about ninjas being overly violent, and didn't they like have to edit it so that Michelangelo's nunchucks were never used?
Yeah, if I remember correctly, the action figures, you know, had the different name too.
Yeah,
so they're more highly collectible.
Didn't I remember seeing I don't know if they were bootlegs. I remember like seeing like in a discount store ones that said Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, I remember seeing I think it was an episode of Toy Hunter when you ever watched Toy Hunter on the Learning Channel? You ever seen it?
No, but I probably should.
Jordan,
actually, I did once, I think.
Jordan, I can't remember his last name. He owns a big toy store in New Jersey. Hold on. But anyway, he did a trip to England. And that Jordan Hembrough and Hollywood Heroes is his toy store. He did a trip to England. I think that's where he found some of those ads. So, I mean, it's interesting how, I mean, you can have all the nudity you want, but you can't.
Well, especially in England, yeah.
Yeah. It's just a weird deal, but.
Just turn to page 3.
Yeah. This was the stuff in the 90s against violence, I mean, UFC went through this later on, or really at this time too. Video games, music, movies. It was a big deal. All right. The advertising allotment for the Orlando Bash is more than twice the usual WCW pay-per-views. The half-page ad in USA Today was $75,000. That's a good chunk for 1994.
That's more than they paid Jean-Paul Levesque in his year that he was under contract. It is.
That's crazy. You're worth as much as a half page in the USA Today, boy.
Well, he was just a cruiserweight.
In his neon tights. All right, and I love this. And this is Wade. The latest prediction by insiders is that Curt Hennig will not be in WCW in time for the August Bash Show in St. Paul, Minnesota.
August Bash Show in St. Paul, Minnesota?
Yeah, I guess a house show.
That they were calling Great American Bash?
I guess they were doing a Great American Bash tour. I don't know.
I don't think they did a Great American Bash
tour. I don't think so they did either, but he called it a Bash Show. But anyway,
Dave.
This is Wade.
Okay.
Of course it's Wade. It's Minnesota. Curt Hennig, the reason why I love this is because at this time period, I think Curt Hennig was rumored to go to WCW 1,800 times. It seemed like every week, every other week, Curt Hennig is going to WCW. Curt Hennig is going to WCW. Curt Hennig is going to.
It's actually kind of amazing that we have not had more instances of this so far in Between the Sheets.
I know. But, you know, he was rumored to go almost as more than anybody was, even more maybe Yokozuna. So, I mean, and eventually did go.
It was
a little later.
Well, and then the closest he got to going anywhere besides WWF, especially in 94, was Herb Abrams UWF.
Funny you mentioned Herb Abrams, Bix, because yeah. An article on Herb Abrams.
Yes, in New Fighting Spirit magazine, Yes, I got an article.
So there you go. An early plug for Biggs.
Yes, and it's great, great photos of Herb and everyone else from the UWF by George Napolitano in that article.
And now let's go to the land of the rising sun and All Japan Pro Wrestling.
Thank you.
Yes, Mauro Naulo, who on Bracketology said that, and made me think of the show. Pretty uneventful week with mainly weak crowds as well. The only title match of the week had Dan Crawford and Doug Furness, the Can-Ams, retain their all-Asian tag titles, beating Shiyoshi Kikuchi and Jun Nakayama, very young Jun Nakayama, on July 6th in Tokushima at the Municipal Gym. Now, I'll go ahead and read the rest of this card here. There are 1,800 fans, excuse me. Masao Inoue defeated Ryokaku Izumita, Junior Izumita. Yoshinori Ogawa over Richard Slinger. This match here. Abdullah the Butcher and Giant Kamala, which is Ben Peacock, over Kurt Beyer and the Eagle. Bix, who of course the Eagle was.
Jackie Fulton.
George Hines, yeah. Mitsuo Momoda and Rusha Kimura over Haruka Aigen and Mighty Inoue in your old man match. Masafuchi over Satoru Asako. Kenta Kobashi over Takao Amore. Giant Baba and Stan Hansen over Johnny Ace and Johnny Smith. Your All-Asian Tag Title match. And your main event, Toshiaki Kawada and Kira Taue over Mitsuhama Masawa and Taman Honda. So there's your big show of the week in All Japan Pro Wrestling.
That's an interesting card, I guess.
Yeah. Well, there's one name missing from this. He would come back to the tour. As Tom Zink wasn't there. And because he was testifying in the defense trial, and he returned to the tour on July 9th. So, people don't remember that Tom Zink actually did do some All Japan work in the mid 90s.
Yeah, and as we'll talk about later, he was on steroids.
Now, New Japan Pro Wrestling has a busy week, but the big stories was in the magazines as they featured the main story of Seiji Sakaguchi and Antonio Pena have reached an agreement, and that AAA will send a whole crew of talent for a New Japan tour by the end of the year, probably starting by sending a tag team in October for the tag team tournament. And speaking of magazines, this is a WCW story, but it was here. Speaking of magazines, WCW officials explained the clash finished so well to the press that every magazine in Japan reported that Johnny B. Badd beat Steve Austin to win the United States heavyweight title. Biggs, explain that whole situation.
I think it was Austin used a foreign object, and the referee catches it and holds up before he calls for the bell, and then he's arguing with Austin, and then Bad cradles him, and it's treated as if he won the title, kind of, and then they say they'll announce later in the show the official decision. They never do.
Johnny Badd defeated Steve Austin, reverse decision. Austin originally won the match inside cradle. It's punching Badd in the stomach with a foreign object. The referee, Pee Wee Anderson, came out to dispute referee Nick Patrick's call. In the ensuing confusion, Badd rolled up Austin with Anderson counting the pinfall. Badd celebrated with a title belt, but no official decision was announced. Of course, why? WCW, everybody. So there you go. The two consecutive nights of Sapporo on July 8th and July 9th both sold out the 6,000-seat Nakajima Sports Center for major shows. The four survivors of a two-night tournament, which would determine the final slots in the G1 climax, that will be held on August 3rd to August 7th at Tokushima Hall, where Yoshiaki Yatsu, Takayuki Iizuka, Osamu Kido, and Shiro Koshinaka. Now, in the key matches on July 8th...
Wait, what's Yatsu doing there?
He was working there. Yeah, he did some New Japan work. Okay. Let's see here. All right, I want to read the full show as to just the key matches. So let's try this out here. Yatsu had SPWF was going at this time period. So I guess it was they were just helping him out. All right, here we go. All right, here's your card for the first show. We had Tokumisi Ishizawa, feature Kendo Kashin. And Yuji Nagata. Huh?
Yeah, you mean Dragon Soldier B.
Yeah, and Yuji Nagata over Tadayo Suda and Tatsuhito Takeiwa. El Samurai, Flying Scorpio, and Shinjiro Otani over American Machine, Black Cat, and Black Tiger.
The Observer says that the foreign team won, or the all-foreign team won that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, the Observer
has... Locos team won, yeah.
Yes. The cage match has it wrong. So, all right. Flying Scorpio, Tickle Scorpio, American Machine, Our Bar,
wearing Black Tiger, Love Machine mask. Yeah.
Yeah, and Black Tiger, Eddie Guerrero. Nasty Boys over Lord Steven Regal and Max Moon. Of course, Max Moon was Paul Diamond. So, there you go.
Wasn't Brian Blair also in on this tour as Killer B?
Not this tour.
Was that a different tour? A
different tour. All right, your G1 matches, your B-Zone match, Hiro Saito v. Akira Nogami, your C-Zone match, Azuka over Great Kabuki by disqualification, your D-Zone match, Kido over Michi Yoshihara, and your A-Zone match, Yoshiaki Yatsu over Kengo Kimura. Next match, and this match here is pretty fucking awesome. Jushin Thunder Liger over Great Sasuke with the Super Fisherman Buster. 15-15. Meltzer rated at 5 stars. It is a hell of a damn match. Hell of a match. Then you had the Ricky Scott Steiner.
It took me a second to remember that one. That, I think that might actually be their best match together.
I think it is too. Ricky Scott Steiner over Hiroshi Hase and Keiji Muto in a 4.5-star match in 20 minutes, 55 seconds.
That's also a terrific match.
Yep. Yes. And your 6-man main event, Masahiro Chono, Power Warrior, and Shin Hashimoto over Riki Choshu, Tatsumi Fujinami, Yoshiaki Fujiwara. Now, that's night one.
And that's also a team you don't want to meet in a dark alley.
No way. Night two, same building. American Machine and Black Cat over Otani and Nagata. Liger over Black Tiger in 13:43. Power Warrior over Flying Scorpio in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. Odd that Scorpio is in a match that went 4:20, isn't it, Bix? After what we talked about on the show.
Yeah. And we were talking about Huddle House off the air, too, but that's besides the point.
G1 Climax, the A-Zone match, Yatsu over Manabu Nakanishi. Azuka over Shinichi Nakano in a C-Zone match. Kido over Tetsutoshi Goto in a D-Zone. And Shiro Shinaka over Saito in the B-Zone. So that's how they got there in there. Lord Steven Regal over Masahiro Chono. The Steiners over the Nasty Boys, which those two teams always had good chemistry together in 14:03. And your main event, Choshu, Fujinami, and Fujiwara over Hase, Muto, and Hashimoto, 3.75-star match. So, yeah, some really good New Japan stuff in this time period.
Was the second show taped or just the first?
Huh?
Was the second show taped too?
Definitely. And the Liger-Black Tiger match was built up on July 6th when Tiger pinned Liger with his tornado DDT at the middle rope. And Regal, if you notice, Regal's beating Chono here. And
we all found out why he passed to the beach.
Yes, because, of course, Regal's being set up for Antonio Inoki. Right. So,
I really want to see the Steiners Nasty Boys in New Japan. I'm curious how that would have gone at this point.
I remember that match. It was pretty good.
Did it air on TV or just on Classics?
It was, I saw it on the TV.
Okay.
If I remember right. Yeah, I definitely saw
seeing that. Okay.
But, what was I saying? Yeah, Inoki and Regal's been being built up, and the rumors are that the January 4th Tokyo Dome main event will be Antonio Inoki's retirement match against Hulk Hogan, which, of course, never happened.
Nah.
Think about they actually ran that match. How big that would have been in this era.
That would have been pretty big, yeah.
Definitely. Now, after losing to Liger, Great Sasuke issued a challenge for Liger to appear on a major Michinoku Pro show, putting his IWGP heavyweight title, junior heavyweight title, against Sasuke's independent world junior heavyweight title.
Yeah, I'm sure Liger really wants and needs the world independent title, junior heavyweight title.
And they're negotiating to bring back Gran Hamada for an August 4 match against Liger.
I think he did come back in, right? I don't know if he had worked with Liger, but he did come back in.
Yeah. Now, moving on to Pancras, they held a show on July 6th in Amagaseki with a lot of surprises. Dave says, as first off, Henko Pardue made it to the semifinals of the Ultimate Fight 2.
Remco, who was not, I don't think he was Brazilian, right? So it was Remco.
Yeah, I screwed up. Remco Pardue debuted after losing the Hoist Gracie and Ultimate Fight 2, debuted Pancrase. It took more than 14 minutes before he could make Vernon White submit in the opener. Pardue was supposed to score an easy squash win to set up a match with Minoru Suzuki on July 26. Second surprise was that Suzuki was knocked down 3 minutes by a knee to the chin as he was going for a takedown by, and this is how it's spelled here, Baz Rutan, R-U-T-O-N, a kickboxer.
No, who has, say it again.
Kickboxer who has pretty well destroyed everyone he's faced thus far, but was considered not to be able to beat Suzuki because of the latter's wrestling and submission ability. How about that paragraph, Vic? I mean, that few sentences there, Vic.
Yeah, I mean, that Baz Rutan.
It's just interesting to read now.
Wasn't Baz Rutan the secretary on L.A. Law?
The thing is, you know, Baz became this huge star, and this is his early days in Pancrase. It's always fun to read stuff like that.
Yes.
And then the main event, Jason DeLuca, who made it to the second round of Ultimate Fight 2 before losing
the
Hoist.
That's Jason DeLuca, by the way.
DeLuca, excuse me.
No. It's spelled. You're reading it how it's written. I'm telling everyone else, not you.
Yeah, I know, but I should have caught that because I remember Jason DeLuca. But yeah, Jason DeLuca, who also lost to Hoist Gracie, absolutely demolished this group's top star, Hamasakatsu Funaki, in 1 minute and 1 second of a knee lock submission. I remember that being very shocked at that one. Because Funaki was, you know, a big deal. And here's DeLuca just destroying him.
Yeah, I think, with hindsight, that one I think was kind of a work, right? If not a work, then Funaki throwing the fight too.
Right? Could have been.
I'm already thinking of a different one.
Could have been. Still, I don't know. Would have been a smart work to do, though, considering Funaki's your top guy, to have him losing to DeLuca, who was not a big name.
No, but that you got to make stars.
Yeah, but he wouldn't be the ones I would make.
He was all right. The Lion's Den guy by this time, wasn't he?
Yeah.
They're so handsome.
They are, aren't they?
Yeah.
That's good.
You know what the Lion's Den guys did as their day jobs to make money, right?
Tell everyone, Bix.
They were male strippers.
Yeah.
Night jobs, I guess.
Yes. NOW.
Now.
That's right. Now, they start their latest tour on July 11th in Sioux, featuring Apollo Sugawara over questionable. Nobody knows the name of who it was. Ryo Miyake over Tae Leon Nam. I guess like Pak Song Nam. Kendo Nagasaki over Kishin Kawabata.
Well, that's a match. Actually, the next match is
Chris Adams and Poison Sawada over Apollo Sugawara and Kazuhiko Masazaki.
Is there a sleazier team in the history of professional wrestling than Gentleman Chris Adams and Poison Sawada?
And of course, Poison Sawada will become Poison Sawada Julie in DDT.
Yeah.
Became, you know, one of the DDT legends. But, oh my goodness. Of course, Kazuhiko Masazaki was the future Shunmei Masazaki in Big Japan. But, wow.
This match needed a photo of Phantom, what's his face?
Phantom Funayoshi?
No. Who's the... No, I'm thinking of someone else then.
It needed a shower after it, I think.
Chris Adams and Poison Sawada.
Woo. Then we had a battle royal won by Kishin Kawabata. That is your main event. LLPW. We had on July 11th, they had a show in Tokyo where Shinobu Kandori was, quote, accidentally, unquote, kicked in the eye by tag partner Rumi Kazama, went berserk, and destroyed Mizuki Endo with the armbar, and sold the eye huge, which was an angle to work an injury for a big match, which I think they're having a big match at Budokan. I mean, a Combat Toyota of FMW appearing at the show and did a stare down the eye with Eagle Sawai, and the two were held apart by other women at the Eagles match, issuing challenges all over the PA to build up a future match between them. Who would want to kick Shinobu Kandori in the eye if it wasn't an accident?
Tenryu?
Well, he's a dude. I'm talking about Beam Hail.
Yeah, I don't know why that would seem like a good idea to anyone. That just not does not seem smart.
No. Now, in this section, we're also got Europe here, Bix. That's CWA Autobots on July 9th, ran a big show in Graz, Austria. And this is the car we have here. We have August Smeisel and Ulf Herrmann over Giant Haystacks and Primo Carnera by DQ.
Wow, that's a tag team, too. now I really want to see Giant Haystacks and I presume that's Primo Carnera the third.
Of course.
I really want to see Giant Haystacks and Primo Carnera the third against Chris Adams and Poison Sawada.
How about this singles match? Ice Train over Hiro Yamamoto. Hiro Yamamoto, of course, was Hiroshi Tenzan. Here he is with Ice Train in for Autobots.
And I don't know if we're ever going to get to this issue of the Observer. I mean, well, I'm sure we will at some point. There's a week around this time where Dave like jokes about Yamamoto changing physique in the way that people would always joke about people, you know, mysteriously growing muscles on their learning excursions.
They're getting polished.
Yeah, yeah. Poise. And Tokyo Joe sent Dave this really angry letter that Dave ran in the reader's pages about the special weight gaining diet that he's on. And how you dare you even come close to insinuating that that Otto Vons was getting him steroids? And Dave apologized or something. It's on the Observer site. I don't remember when exactly it was.
Yeah, that's quite the read. I remember, but I can't remember exactly when. So maybe that'll come up sooner and later. All right, listen to this match. For the vacant CWA tag titles, 2 out of 3 falls. Lord Stephen Casey and Tony St. Clair defeated Fit Finley and John Hawk. That's right. JBL. And Lord Stephen Casey, of course, was the British Steve Casey that worked in the United States in the 85.
Yes, not the Steve Casey who told Doyle King he doesn't care about AIDS.
not Texas Steve Casey. The next match, Franz Schumann won the CWA middleweight title from Barry Horowitz.
That sounds like it'd be a really good match, too.
Yeah. Well, how about this match?
Oh,
Cannonball Grizzly, a.k.a. PN News, defeated Hacksaw Jim Duggan by disqualification. Wow. How about that match?
That's interesting.
And then our main event for the CWA World Heavyweight title, Rambo, not the Lucha guy, not John Rambo, but Rambo retained his title defeating Papa Shango.
Now, remind me where else this Rambo worked and is what? Because I know.
Hold on. Because I don't remember.
Which was the Rambo that worked in Portland and got shot on by Arpar?
That's John Rambo.
Okay. John Rambo from Baltimore.
Yes.
But this is not John Rambo.
Rambo's Luke Poirier.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yes.
AKA... Luke. What was he in Truth Commission? He was Sniper?
He was Sniper, yes.
Okay. Also, randomly in WWF TV tapings in the mid-80s for no reason. Just there.
Yeah.
All-Star Wrestling all the time for some reason.
Worked as Rocky Montana at one point. So, yeah. Interesting stuff. All right. It's time for our break. And when we come back, we'll go to Mexico. And Antonio Peña is getting close to a deal in the United States for a big show. We'll be back after this.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Placement Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlacementNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscullo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current day wrestling with Main Event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. And relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series, led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We got sports covered too with the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast and the TJ McClune Show. PTBN tackles pop culture and irreverence with Richard and the Mailman, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, and if you like a hybrid of all of this in list form, check out Jordan Duncan's Rank and File. All of these shows are available on PlayStationNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStationNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network. That's the PWO PTBN Podcast Network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickerstaff, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with good old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO PTBN Podcast Network.
And we're back, and we're discussing, during the break, we've been discussing our Amazon referral link, of course, tinyurl.com/BTSAmazon, where you go, and whenever you make any purchase from Amazon.com, go through that link, put the items in the cart, do what you got to do there, and we get a percentage of what you spend. Nothing more comes out of your pocket. We just get a cut from Amazon. And it's ever since we've been talking about the purchase on this show, we've it's helped out a little bit. And what we mainly do with this is that, you know, we use that as resources, the buy resources for what we need for this show. I know last week we had some stuff for Wrestling Forum that came from money from Amazon and other places. So keep it up. You know, we always could use the extra help. And if you have any material on your own that you want to give to us, let us know. And we'll see if we need it or not, because anything's always welcome that we don't have. But Bix, we have the list of Amazon purchases up. And tell us, what do we have new this week?
All right. Well, we have some. They're under books. They're volume numbers. I'm guessing these are maybe like graphic novel compilations. Let's see. What are these? I'm looking at this. Chew Volume 1, Taster's Choice.
Chew is spelled how?
S-H-E-W.
Oh, Chew. Ah, oh, hey. Interesting. You know, always, is that a cookbook or is that just a...
No, it's about detective... Tony Chu is a detective with a secret, a weird secret.
Oh, whoa!
Zebopathic, which means he gets psychic impressions from whatever he eats. It means he's a hell of a detective.
Now that sounds amazing.
That actually sounds interesting. Paperback's $10. Huh. And it's a...
Tony Chu.
$5 on Kindle and Comixology.
Awesome.
Let me try this, actually. Okay. Lazarus Volume 1, another graphic novel, it looks
like. Yeah, which is, did that get turned into a TV show?
Maybe, but that's...
Oh, I think of something else.
I'm guessing these aren't new, but now we get into the CDs.
Yes.
The Rolling Stones 12x5.
Yes, I got that for one of my boss always gets stuff for. Yeah, great album.
All right. Eric Clapton.
Same. Now, that's Eric Clapton's self-titled album.
Yes.
Him sitting on the chair.
At the Eric Clapton live album, is that also you?
What's the name of the album?
There's no heading on the Amazon page, but then on the thing it says it looks like it's 11/17/70 or something.
No, that's Elton John.
Oh, Elton John. I'm sorry, I was reading.
And that's for my boss too.
I still had Clapton on the brain.
Yeah, he got those three this week, and that's a great album too. That's from Los Angeles. That's from Elton's first night tour, and it's just Elton, a drummer, and a bass player. That's it, and it's an awesome show.
Okay. MP3 of 4th of July. What is this?
I think you mentioned
by Shooter Jennings with George. Oh, did we do that last week?
Yeah, last week. Anyway, it's a great song. I listened to that song because that was mentioned on this show.
Now, I think it was Kitty Litter we did before, but this is, we have Arm & Hammer Cat Litter Deodorizer. Is that you? No, because you don't have a litter box, right?
Yeah, we got to keep. Yeah, but you got to keep your cats. You know, believe me, cats can stink it up, man. You know,
this
you
got to litter deodorizer.
I know you got to keep the lid. You know, keep that clean too.
Yes, but this isn't yours.
No.
Okay. Cat dewormer.
Oh God, yeah, I got a cat that's got heartworms.
But this is not your purchase, though.
No. Check this out. The vet told us that the cat I have that has heartworms said that it will die from it. That was like 6 years ago. This cat also has feline AIDS. And
that's real? Okay.
Yes. I had two cats with it. One just died from it, basically. But this cat's immune system is just insane. I call it Magic Johnson. Because, I mean, once it got AIDS, feline AIDS, it got bigger. It's insane, this cat. But, yeah. Heartworms, feline AIDS. It's amazing this cat's living as long as it has.
Okay. Now Foods brand Cordyceps. Is that you? I'm guessing that's not your order.
No. Not me.
See, the ink cartridges and I think the probiotics were last week.
Yes.
Again, we don't know why Amazon has these in some weird out of order. Tim Hortons Coffee.
Oh, that's a place I've always wanted to go. Because I've always heard my Canadian friends talk about Tim Hortons. And it just just hints about poutine and all the other stuff. I've always wanted to go there, so... Maybe one day I'll be able to get up in that area.
You did not order the Tim Hortons coffee from Amazon.
Not me. No, I'm not a. I don't drink coffee. It's funny.
You don't drink coffee.
Yes, it's funny that me and my brothers do not drink coffee, but our parents drink coffee. I wouldn't say all the time, but they always drink it at breakfast.
See, the right way for me to have done that would be, hey, did you order any
coffee?
Someone ordered
coffee. How about coffee?
But
well, we're going to talk about USWA in a little bit. Who one of the guys that worked for USWA was Guy.
Coffee.
There you go.
There we go. Enough of that. the Cuisinart knife set, I think, was last. Again.
Yeah, you haven't hit it.
I can never figure out how the benches work. How this works. Someone ordered a Fitbit.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Be careful. Those things get hacked. I know there's been a problem with that lately where people have been hacking in the Fitbits.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Don't want hackers getting your biometric information.
No, they're getting more than that. I forget what they said that were able to get off of there. But yeah, it was. I saw a news item about that.
Well, all right.
Anything else of note?
Oh, a Kevin Durant Golden State Warriors logo t-shirt.
Timely, yeah. Interesting. Durant, of course, signed the big contract on Monday. Well, announcing on Monday and on the 5th, on the 4th, and signing on the Thursday the 7th. So, yeah, that's timely.
But this KD logo t-shirt does not belong to you?
Does not belong to me, no. I like Kevin Durant, but no, it's not me. The only purchase I made this week was I had to buy another 100 pack of Verbatim DVDs.
Okay, of course.
Of course, got to, man. You know how we are. We go through the DVDs. I'm transferring VHS to DVD. I'm still still trying to get that done. That's a long process.
Anything interesting this week?
Not wrestling wise. It's mainly right now I'm transferring stuff I recorded into the fall, the winter of 2005. So it's like boxing matches, old NFL films, stuff like that. Nothing like that. I mean, recently, like some of the old Saturday Night Lives. Do you remember when NBC was airing Saturday Night Live at like 3 a.m, the old one?
Yes, and they were uncut.
Yeah, they were uncut. So I went through the. I had a few of those. I just put on DVD in the past week or two.
That's good. What era though were they?
Oh, this was early '80s.
But which season?
This would have been mainly the Eddie cast.
Oh.
Eddie, the one that I love the most. It was who was the guest host? But there's a skit on there where Eddie plays this guy who owns this lounge in New Jersey,
mm-hmm.
and he looks like Velvet Jones, but he's doing like this totally different type of voice.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Piscopo is in the sketch with these women. He's like in this bed. It's hard to describe. Anyway, the women are feeding Joe Piscopo this shit. And it's like some type of creamy substance.
Oh boy.
So Joe off camera is throwing it at Eddie. I think it was host Terry Garr was the host. He's throwing it at Eddie, trying to break him. And eventually he breaks him. And Eddie is covered in his cream.
I'm having to hold back right now.
Eddie's like, stop it. Stop it. Stop it. We're live. He says in that type of voice.
Yeah.
It is hilarious. It's something you got to see because Eddie was, he broke character at times, but this one he really broke. And it's just funny watching stuff flying in his face. But yeah, those were some cool shows. I hate that they quit
doing it. The same way.
They would show like the 70s shows. This is before the DVD sets came out.
Right.
And some of the Lauren era of the late 80s, early 90s was good stuff. So. Yeah, that's basically the stuff I've been putting on DVDs lately, and dubbing some wrestling on there too. So,
I remember at one point before the SCTV DVDs came out. Do you remember when like Later was ending, and Later just became a bunch of 30-minute SCTV reruns?
Yeah, so I remember that.
10-hour tapes filled with the. So that was something.
I don't know if it's germane to the subject or whatever, but I'll make a recommendation to anybody. Let me see if it's on Amazon still or not. I'll make my Amazon recommendation of the week. This may be a new deal. I do.
Blank DVDs?
No. Let me see if it's on here. There was a TV on Showtime in the early 80s, and it was It aired on Showtime, but it's based out of Canada. Named Bizarre. You remember that? You ever seen that, Bix?
What was it?
Bizarre.
No.
It was hosted by John Biner. Okay, yes, it's on Amazon.com. The Best of Bizarre, Uncensored Volumes 1 through 10. All right? It's a big set, 10 DVDs, $54.05.
Wow.
John Biner was the... the host of the show. This is after John Biner pretty much was blacklisted by Johnny Carson. Go read that if you don't know that story. And in the early days of Showtime, they brought the show in from Canada. And this is John Biner and Super Dave's on here doing. He's doing two gimmicks. He's doing his real self as like John Biner's producer, and he's doing Super Dave. So if you ever seen him on Curb, he's basically doing. His persona on Curb, he's doing it on this.
Mm-hmm.
Bizarre is a crazy ass fucking show. I mean, nudity, all kinds of just weird comedy. John Byner's awesome. So that my Amazon recommendation of the week, The Best of Bizarre Uncensored, Volume 1 through 10. Mike Myers is on this, an early Mike Myers appearance. So I'm trying to think of a way to describe the show. I wouldn't say it's like a version of Benny Hill, but it's I guess maybe nudity-wise. Actually, they actually had nudity. But it is a really, really good show. So go check it out if you haven't. Just looking for Bizarre online. I don't know if there's any episodes on YouTube or not, but yeah, great Super Dave stuff. So, this is when Super Dave became Super Dave. This is the show that made that gimmick.
So speaking of YouTube, this made me think of something. I'm about to bring great joy to you as we're recording this.
Yes.
Had you seen a few weeks ago that Gordon Solie hamburger eating contest clip on YouTube?
I posted it on Twitter. That was on. That was broadcast on Bill Tush. Bill Tush.
Oh, okay. See, I thought it might be something like that because this guy uploaded a lot of clips from Tush.
Yeah, he worked for Tush, and it was on Bill Tush's show on WTCG before TBS in the mid 70s. He had this show that was it was way ahead of his time. It was like
Jan Hooks was on it.
Jan Hooks was on. It's way ahead of his time. I'm trying to think of a good analogy for this show. If you remember, not necessarily the news and shows like that. It was the precursor for that. But based out of Atlanta, and they did a deal where they had Gordon Solie. This is, tremendous footage. I'd say about 77, 78 from Techwood. You know, doing announcing a hamburger eating contest in the ring. I mean, they do the intro and shit like that, and do the end. They never actually really show anything because they go to fake commercials and whatever. But it's great quality footage, and it makes me wonder if this guy has anything from wrestling.
Well, that's why I'm telling you, because I had asked him, because this guy clearly worked for TBS. And I just went to look at his channel now, because when you were talking about that stuff, it made me think of Tush. And I realized, I should see if this guy uploaded any more stuff, because also Chris would like, and blah, blah, blah. This guy has uploaded, he's uploaded one of the Georgia Championship Wrestling Christmas card videos, and yesterday uploaded a local Omni promo from 85 with Dusty and the Gorilla.
You're kidding me.
Not kidding one bit.
I'm going there right.
Should I just play the audio or? It's only 30 seconds.
He also has Ric Flair's Plumber's Crack.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yes, please play it.
Okay, and then I guess we'll get to Lucha Libre and PayPal. The Gorilla's holding a basketball, by the way.
Well, my gorilla's a little bit more than just a ordinary gorilla. He's a bad gorilla, and there's some inside him that might be a little bit human. So it's going to be a big surprise in the Omni. The Koloff, Nikita Navin Koloff world titles against Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, and a full-blooded, blooded American gorilla, brother. And there will be gorilla shit all over the Omni.
I got oh, it's an outtake? I didn't watch that before. Oh my god!
That's amazing.
I'm downloading that right now.
That's amazing.
I'm going to send that right to Naylor.
That's amazing.
That was unexpected.
I cannot believe that. Yes, and this guy also has a video called Ric Flair Plumber's Crack, where Ric Flair has his tights wrapped pulled down, and he's for good 15 to 20 seconds. Ronnie Garvin's throwing him around. This is tremendous video quality, by the way. This guy,
he has master tapes or everything. He just dubbed it off of him.
We got to this is a future source right here. We got to figure something out, this guy.
Yeah, I mean, I had asked him, does he have more wrestling stuff, and he said he wasn't sure, but he's gonna look.
Oh. And he's got Wolfman and Donna on here. Atlanta legends. Wolfman and Donna. Oh, That takes me back.
Oh, I wasn't subscribed to... Oh, no, wait a second.
All right. Let's get back to the show.
PayPal, oh, love... quickly.
PayPal, Bix. Talk about it.
If you want to donate to the show for us to be able to buy stuff or just to donate either way, send to my PayPal by going to paypal.me/DavidBix. Just put in the comments what you want to be done with it, if you want it to go to me or to Chris or to be split between us or to go to stuff that's just put back into the show like newsletters and so on. So that's paypal.me/DavidBix.
Awesome. Wolfman and Donna. Ask for the Wolfman. All right, AAA.
Yeah, let's go by the basketball, I don't know if you noticed that the gorilla was holding. It says TBS official basketball written on it in magic marker.
I love those Omni promos. I need more of them in my life. All right, Antonio Pena and Juan.
One you never wasn't even on TV. Well, was this basic promo he cut that you remember until he started?
No, I don't remember. And see, normally the Omni promos are always cut in front of the ring too, but this is early in the Crockett run, so this would have been like first five episodes. So they probably changed it.
Gonna be filled with gorilla shit.
All right, Antonio Pena and Juan Francisco Cortez, who run the wrestling in AAA. We're in the United States over the weekend meeting with Ron Scholar, who promotes U.S. shows under the IWC banner in New York. And Scholar also has meetings with Televisa, which owns the company board in California. Of course, this is all setting up. All you know, they're ducks in a row for When Worlds Collide. So,
and we did a When Worlds Collide show with Dr. Lucha Steve Sims. Which
that's right. Go listen to the archives.
I don't recall the exact episode number. But
it was that week of November, so go check it out.
Yeah.
And it was a good show.
I think that's one of our very best shows, actually.
Yeah. Now, July 8th in Tijuana, we had yet another sellout crowd of 5,500, which for what was described as a very entertaining live show with a weak main event. Main event was Conan, Pedro Aguayo, and Mascara Sagrada, losing by DQ against the new Infernales, which would have been Satanico, MS Uno and Perona Morgan here?
Maybe Massacre?
Massacre. Go try. Let me see here. Because this was the AAA version.
Right.
So this would have been. Io del Spectro.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was part of that. All right, Conan looked as big or bigger than the last time he was in Los Angeles. Conan was either off the juice or way down during the last few months, and it was reflected since his wrestling was starting to get better. Like many others, he appears to have less stamina and has less agility carrying the added muscle. The funny thing is, even at a muscular 205 pounds as opposed to 245 pounds, he's still got a better physique than anyone else in the promotion, so his gimmick works, and he's every bit as over at the lighter weights. Huh. The highlight in Tijuana was a 4.25-star match with local hero Rey Mysterio Jr., beating Jerry Estrada by disqualification. And there was another hot match as Tony Arce and Volcano of Destructores teamed with Psicosis, where they lost. Oh, Rey Mysterio Sr. beat Jerry Estrada, excuse me, to lose to Latin Lover, El Torero, and Rey Mysterio Jr. Arce, Volcano, and Psicosis also started a feud with the Dinamitas, attacking them after their match with Los Payasos Tricolor. So, yeah. Yeah, AAA is loaded at this time period. They put on great shows, left and right. Tremendous stuff. I mean, wouldn't you agree, 94 AAA?
Oh, yeah.
God, you know, that whole era.
But especially 93, 94.
Yeah, great stuff. All right, EMLL. Pegasus Kid, Chris Benoit, returned on July 8th at Rensco, teaming with Vampiro and Rayo de Jalisco in a Cuadrangular de Tercias tournament. The tournament came down to the Cowboys, Los Cowboys, Silver King, El Tejano, and El Dandy beating Pegasus, Vampiro, and Rayo. When Vampiro was pinned in the third fall after a foul and post-match saw the two face teams brawl all over the place for several minutes. Earlier in the tournament, the Cowboys won a non-title match, of course, over the CMLL Trios champions, Lo Ola Blanca, Dr. Wagner Jr., Gran Marcos Jr., El Hijo de Gladiador, and after the win, challenged for a title match. While the Pegasus team had beaten Mano Negra, Negro Casas, and Perov Jr. in an OK match, with Pegasus and Casas only against each other for a short period of time, so it's kind of disappointing. Yeah, people don't remember Benoit had a run here, and had a couple of good things, but really it was underwhelming, wouldn't you say?
It was very uneventful and underwhelming.
Yeah, wasn't this UWA run?
No.
And they could, I mean, there was stuff that could have been done. I mean, can you imagine him and Casas in the singles?
Yeah. I'm trying to think who else. And then he ends up back in the briefly in the AAA fold, but not really.
Yeah. Would have been good stuff. Now, they made their return to the Olympic Auditorium in Los Angeles on July 9th. Headlined by Ultimo Dragon retaining his UWA middleweight title, beating Negro Casas in front of an estimated 1,650 fans. Ticket prices were lower from $32 to $18 from the previous show to $18 to $10 on this show. So even though the crowd was up about 200 pay from the last card 6 weeks earlier, the gate was down. They only flew in 7 EMLO wrestlers and filled the card out with locals. Reports for the show was okay, with the main event hitting a 3¾ stars because the third fall was too short. Los Brazos worked the mercenaries in the semifinal, which was a bloody double counter with Brazo de Plata doing his fake heart attack for the second straight show. No return date was announced. And Big Stud, who the mercenaries were?
Wait, the mercenaries? Oh, is this also the guys who are usually La Migra?
Yes.
So Bill Anderson, was Luis Piccoli here?
He probably would. I don't know.
He was Madonna's boyfriend.
I think he may have been Madonna's boyfriend by now.
So it's Billy Anderson and who else?
Rick Patterson.
And
would Renesto have been in here?
Tim Renesto?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Could have been. Kurt Brown and guys like that wouldn't know better. There were different mercenaries. Now, they EMLO and the American-based Mexican Wrestling Federation ran a successful show on July 10th in Fresno, drawing 2,000 fans, which is great for
the show. That's the group that also ran Compton, right?
Yeah, which is great for a show about the wrestlers having any local television exposure, particularly when you consider that it was appealing to a Mexican audience using a Japanese wrestler as a main event babyface and had no top draw Mexican faces underneath. Dragon again retained his title, beating Costas in a 4¼ star match. The fact the EMLO could draw well without television is a pretty strong indication they would be an even bigger market for AAA. WWF was in Fresno about a week earlier and drew 3,000 fans.
Jeez.
Numachi, which is Sami Numata, the All Japan women wrestler, retired in February, will come out of retirement here to tape with Reina Jabuki, Akira Hokuto. So there you go.
I don't remember anything about Numata.
It must not have lasted long. But I really want to see these Ultimo Dragon Negro Casas matches.
Yeah. MWF taped their shows.
Yeah.
So
maybe it's somewhere. Somebody's.
It may be around there somewhere.
And let's go to Puerto Rico to finish our Latin section, as Rey Gonzalez and El Bronco captured the WWC tag titles from the Tahitian Warrior and Muhammad Hussein on July 6th at the TV tapings in Toa Alta, Puerto Rico.
Which Samoan is Tahitian Warrior here?
It's not Samu. And of course, Muhammad. Huh?
Tongue Kid?
No, I don't think so. Because he had already had, it's Lloyd on the way. This is L.A. Smooth, Alofa.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe he was Samoan Gangsta Party.
Samoan Gangsta Party was Samu and Rosie.
I thought L.A. Smooth was part of the Gangsta Party.
No, but it was Samu and Rosie, wasn't it?
No.
It was Samu and Lloyd?
No, he was L.A. Smooth in ECW, it says.
Wait, was Rosie only WWF then? Or did the team change? Because wasn't Rosie one of them?
Hold on. All right, there's so many analyzed here.
I know.
Matt, this is Rosie. Okay, he was a member of the Samoan Gangster Party. He was Matt Daddy Kane. But L.A. Smooth was there with them. So he may have replaced Samu.
Two.
He may have replaced Samu at one point.
Okay.
Mac
Daddy Kane?
It's their brother. Yeah. So it's their brother. It's Roman Reigns' brother.
And what was Samu's name in Samoan Gangsta Party? Sammy something, right?
Yeah. Samoan Gangsta Party. Let's see.
Sammy the Silk.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Sammy the Silk. And then okay. He was Big Matty Smalls. That was his name in Samoan Gangster Party. So there's two different deals.
So who's Mac Daddy Kane?
I don't know. It's it's different things.
I Wikipedia says Mac Daddy Kane.
And I'm looking at Wikipedia that says Big Matty Smalls.
Wait a
second. Anyway.
One was ECW and one was like the planned WWF name?
They're all brothers. Anyway, on July 9th in Caguas, after Eddie Gilbert was disqualified against Rey Gonzalez, Sotokan Castillo did a run in and Gilbert threw a fireball at him. They're building up for a ring surrounded by fire War Games match with Dutch Mantel's team versus Carlos Colon's team. Doomsday, aka Glenn Jacobs,
great work,
getting a renewed push using the heart punch gimmick and used it to beat the Invader in Caguas. Now, they had done the Inferno match before, but never in a War Games deal, which would have been Gran Guerrera. Gran Guerrera. Well, what they call War Games.
Yeah.
But this is a fun time in WWC, and I don't know if there's any really television around, is there?
There might be some. I've never seen the Eddie stuff, though, around anymore.
Yeah, I've never really seen it either.
And I had forgotten that he actually did have this run. Was he just talent here, or was he also booking a little?
No, I think Dutch was booking.
So how long was Eddie in Puerto Rico for this run?
He was off and on, because he was going through Memphis, too. He was in and out for almost a year.
Wasn't he out of Memphis by this point, though? Wasn't I am the USWA what got him fired, and that was earlier in the year?
Yeah, but, you know, I think he still came back after that, I think.
I think he was gone after that.
You sure? Because I remember him. I thought he did a shot. I could be wrong.
Maybe.
He may have worked Outlaw. I don't know. But I think I remember him being there in the area somewhere. And now let's come back to America and go to ECW.
NWA Eastern Championship
Wrestling. At this time, Eastern Championship Wrestling.
NWA Eastern Championship.
NWA Eastern Championship Wrestling. You're right. Now, the TV show that was scheduled to air on July the 5th was preempted because of the O.J. Simpson hearings and follow-up news coverage. Holly Dangerous did an interview going nuts about O.J. when the show aired 2 days later. Dave Meltzer also notes this group also has the most interesting names for its jobbers, many of whom are named after local indie promoters that they have heat with, like Joel Hartgood, which is named after Joel Goodhart, the former Philadelphia promoter, and even cult hero jobber and TV champ Mikey Whipwreck, named after Dennis Whipwreck, another local promoter.
Oh, Paul.
Wrestling promoters would never do such a thing like that.
No.
Using jobbers named Dave Meltzer and Wade Keller.
Was there ever a Wade... Because wasn't the only Wade Keller, though, the Smoky Mountain one, which wasn't really taking a shot at him? Or was there another Wade jobber?
It could have been. But anyway.
Davey the Observer Meltzer from UWF.
Yeah. Now, we have the ECW promo here, and also a great Cactus Jack promo following Paul Lee. But, let's hear Paul Lee rant and rave on Orenthal James Simpson.
The producers here at NWA Eastern Championship Wrestling have asked me, the psycho yuppie Paul Lee Dangerously, to take time out of my busy schedule and impart my wisdom on you people regarding Saturday night, July 16th at the ECW Arena, a match that will determine the future of professional wrestling. As the franchise, Shane Douglas has been forced to defend the ECW Heavyweight Championship against my man, the most homicidal, genocidal, suicidal, death-defying athlete on the face of the planet, Sabu. But you see, I don't even know why I'm wasting my time making these pre-recorded comments today, because everything on television has been preempted by this damn O.J. Simpson case. I mean, maybe if there's a recess in the preliminary hearings, we might be able to get the show on the air this week, but for all intents and purposes, there's nothing going on in the world besides O.J. Simpson. I tell you what I would do. I would march this guy straight down the jailhouse walk. I would put him in an isolated room. I would close each and every door. I would lock those doors with a big fat deadbolt. I would drop the pellets personally into the little vent. I would have the steam come up. I would just take a real big breath and no more O.J. Simpson, so then you know.
Wow.
O.J. Simpson's a thing of the past. He's a today's society. But Sabu and Shane Douglas are going to determine not the past, but the future of professional wrestling. But before I give you my comments on the franchise, Shane Douglas, I want to take you back about a week ago when Cactus Jack came here, all 1.5 ears of him, and made his comments regarding Sabu and myself.
Oh, so it was the previous week's show. Now,
yeah.
Paul Heyman, by the way, son of a Holocaust survivor. Talking about how we should all just gas O.J. Simpson. So I guess, are we skipping the Cactus promo then?
Yeah, I guess so.
Or should we try to see about the rest of the... Should we try to see about the rest of the Paulie, or... Oh, there he is. Yeah. Wait, let me mute this while I find the beginning of it. But that was quite the promo right there. the juice.
Yeah, he's one to gas OJ.
Yeah, that would work.
Cactus Jack, as long as you're under the protective blanket of Ted Turner, I have nothing to say to you except that if you ever come back to ECW, I'm going to make you feel as welcome as a South American soccer player that scores a goal for the opposing team.
Wow!
The only thing on my mind right now is...
Wow. Well, Paulie must be watching a lot of 30 for 30s in that time.
Yeah, the two Escobars, yeah.
Saturday night, July 16th. A match that will determine the future of professional wrestling. The almighty franchise, Shane Douglas. A man who, in a wrestling federation filled with giants like 911, lunatics like Sabu, maniacs like Terry Funk, hoodies like the Public Enemy, street fighters like Mr. Hughes, brute force technicians like the Pit Bulls,
and what?
Like the Tasmaniac. With all the animals and the maniacs and the death-defying maneuvers here in ECW, it's a wrestler. And a wrestler's wrestler that holds the gold, the franchise, Shane Douglas. But in the past 4 years, only one man has put your shoulders down to the mat, Shane Douglas. Only one man has scored a pinfall over you in the past 4 years. There's only one blemish on your record in the past 4 years. And that was October 2nd, 1993 at NWA Blood Feast 2, when my man, the homicidal, genocidal, suicidal, death-defying Sabu, put your shoulders to the mat. And the question now remains. After that one-hour draw on February 5th, the night the line was crossed, Sabu, Terry Funk, and Shane Douglas all going for the gold. What's going to happen? Saturday night, July 16th. Who's going to be the man to lead the hottest wrestling promotion in the world today, ECW, into the future? Will it be the wrestler? The franchise himself, Shane Douglas? Or will it be Sabu? The death-defying athlete that has invented more maneuvers than any wrestler on the face of the planet. Me? I hope. Scratch that. I pray it's Sabu. But I'm not all that sure. See, I know how good you are, franchise. This is going to truly be the battle to determine wrestling's future. Oh, man, I hope it's Sabu. You can find out, too. Saturday night, July 16th.
There you go.
I was partial to the OJ. That was a good promo, though.
Yeah, Paul sounded good there.
I don't think he gets enough credit for his work in ECW as Paul E.
No, he doesn't, because he's always overshadowed by being Paul Heyman, the boss.
And he did kind of... When did he pull himself off of TV? Like, kind of late...
95.
Yeah, late 95.
Yeah, because he was still doing Danger Zones in the ring in the summer 95.
Yeah, I mean, he was really good, and he did a good job getting across the storylines, obviously, because he was the booker, but he doesn't get enough credit. He did really, really good work there, and as a different character from the previous Paulie Dangerously, too.
Yeah, I hated when he quit doing his character. So,
like,
anyway.
He was a big part of ECW TV early on.
Yeah.
So I wish he had stuck around on screen more.
Yeah. By
the way, though, when was the own goal game? Was it around this time?
It would have been in the World Cup.
Yeah, so it would have been in the pre-.
It would have been, it would have been before this, so yeah. Yeah, so all that was going on around the same era, same time period. All right, anyway, speaking of managers who were bookers running the promotion, Smoky Mountain Wrestling, Jim Cornette must be pulling out his hair over the half.
Mark Strong's not a manager. What do you?
Jim Cornette must be pulling out his hair over the happenings of this past week, which have wreaked havoc on his plans for the fall. First off, Jake the Snake Roberts departed without warning last week, leaving him without a top singles feud, and having to change the Smoky Mountain heavyweight title back to Dirty White Boy before he's planning to do so. He then had to arrange a surprise angle for July 9th in Johnson City, Tennessee, where Chris Walker, the Tom Pritchard lookalike that was in WWF until the crackdown on guys with that kind of physique got serious.
That's an interesting description of Conan Chris Walker.
Yeah.
Would
debut and attack White Boy to set up a feud, which in itself was a gamble because Walker has no proven track record to carry a top singles feud. But Walker didn't show up, so who knows the status of that? The biggest thing... The biggest angle of the fall was scheduled to be a feud where Steve and Scott Armstrong would turn heel and feud with their father. But that looks to be either in danger or out the window because Steve Armstrong has gotten a regular job with All Japan as the Masked Falcon, a role originally designated for Curtis Thompson to be the new tag partner for the Eagle and will work the last three All Japan tours of 1994. So he'll have extremely limited availability after mid-August. Now, after the July 5th TV tapings...
Wait. The Falcon was Steve Armstrong? Or did he even show up? I'm trying to remember if the Falcon actually ended up happening.
Yes.
Okay. I didn't realize that was Steve Armstrong.
Falcon was in... Falcon was in All Japan. But I'm trying to see if it was Steve Armstrong. Let's see, the Falcon. Well, Steve Armstrong. There we go.
I didn't know that. That's an interesting team, too.
Yeah. All right. At the July 5th TV taping, Dirty White Boy came out with the SMW title. Did an interview saying how he beat Jake Roberts for the title, quote, this past week, unquote, in a fictitious match and gained revenge for his wife, Dirty White Girl, who Jake had DDT'd. And that was all that was mentioned about Roberts. Jerry Gordy's being brought in for the August 5th Knoxville show to challenge White Boy for the title. And Roberts, after that interview, was never referred to again at tapings. Basically, meaning he's been written out of the script. The original plan apparently was going to have White Boy taking the title back in Knoxville on August 5th. More on Roberts. As he no-showed the first three shows of the tour, which he was scheduled to headline in cage matches against Dirty White Boy. On July 1st in Knoxville, which was disappointed Crown of 700, considering he had a cage match and the Funks were brought in to work underneath. Roberts apparently left word that he'd arrived around 9:30 p.m., so they stalled the show, and he never showed up. They ended up substituting Bruiser Bedlam, who had earlier in the show lost a dock fight to Tracy Smothers in the cage against White Boy going over. Roberts left no word and missed Barberville, Kentucky on July 2nd, which drew 850 fans, which is SMW's second biggest house ever in the city.
They outdrew Knoxville and Barberville.
Yeah.
That's trailing interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. Trailing only to show that the Steiners appeared on. With Roberts not there, White Boy faced in a cage whoever the audience picked, and Jim Cornette cut a promo to make sure the fans picked him. Bedlam then came in the cage with Cornette, and the Funks locked the door and make it 2-on-1. Eventually, White Boy still pinned Cornette to win the match, and Funks ran in and make it 4-on-1 until the other faces came in to make the save. Now, July 3rd in Marietta, at the Cobb County Civic Center before 445 fans, only 20 minutes from Jake's home in Stone Mountain, Roberts left word that if they wanted him, he'd be there, and word was left on his answer machine that they wanted him there, and he wasn't there again. Once again, Bedlam, who lost to Smothers in about 5 minutes earlier in the show, lost again to White Boy in a 5-minute cage match. Jake finally contacted the promotion on July 4th, saying his wife had difficulty with her pregnancy. Cornette said that if Roberts' story was true, it was a very legitimate excuse for not being there, and would have been no problem, but he was more than upset about Roberts never giving them a reason until 4 days later, and never leaving word that he wouldn't be at the shows or returning the numerous phone calls made to him to find out what was going on. There was still hope that Roberts would show up on July 9th in Johnson City for the cage match against White Boy, but he no-showed once again. Never will be for him here. Johnson City was a pretty hot show, particularly due to Roberts no-showing because they had a great main event. At the show, they announced that White Boy had won the title earlier in the week, and that Roberts no-showed either for transportation problems or out of fear. They brought out all the heels, had the fans pick a White Boy was the face. The promotion didn't do anything to lead the fans in any direction. So the crowd response was a legit barometer over who was over. And Chris Candido was picked. White Boy pinned him in a hot cage match. Brian Lee threw in a glove, but White Boy backdropped Candido before he could use it. then pulled out a chain and hit Candido with it for the pin. After the match, Candido and Brian Lee argued for several minutes before Tammy Fitch calmed him down. The two didn't want to shake hands when it was over. During the match, Candido missed a splash off the top of the cage.
Hmm. Now, is there tape of that? Because I've never seen that match, and I didn't even realize they had like a big singles match in Smoky Mountain. That sounds really good.
I'm trying to remember. Because, God, we watched so much Smoky Mountain.
I mean, you would think those two would work really well together.
Yeah. Let's see. Smoky Mountain. This was July 9th. So, no.
And they're probably there. I'm sure there is tape of it, but whether or not it was like circulating and you got it.
July 3rd to July 16th. That's the shows. We don't have anything in between there.
Do you know if there is a tape, like whether there's a Tommy Noe tape or a Fat Hildebrand's dad shot of it?
We got everything that we knew was in existence.
Did you have any of the Hildebrand's dad stuff?
I mean, all I know is when we watched it, we had everything that we had. Okay. That was known. So we could, I mean, it could be somewhere, but we didn't see it.
That sounds really good, especially if they're single. Whoever, I guess, who would have been the Johnson City correspondent? Tim Whitehead?
Probably.
I mean, if he's singling that out as this awesome match, I really want to see it.
Now, Jake at Smoky Mountain, I mean, that was a risk putting the title on him.
Yeah.
I mean, Cornette, I mean, was playing with fire, and it came back and burned him. Although they did have some fun with Jake, and Jake did really good stuff. It just, you knew something had to said that was going to happen.
Yeah, and how much was he in AAA really after this, or was he gone from AAA or right after this too?
He wasn't there long.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't really do anything of note until he went back to WWF after this.
Yeah,
I mean, he worked a little bit. I think he worked in one of the promotions that was going by Deep South at this time, the one with Disco Inferno.
Yeah, because that was his dad's.
Right, and he was... Have you ever seen the TV from there?
Very little.
It was the most out of shape, at least from this period, you will ever see Jake.
And that's saying a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking right now to see if he had...
I didn't realize that was Grizzly's promotion.
But he was definitely booking.
Okay.
All right, Jay was in AAA. He worked in New York and Chicago AAA shows.
Oh, that's okay.
So couple, 2 weeks later.
So he's there a little longer. Okay.
Night of Champions in Los Angeles. Yeah. Oh, here's an interesting match. Jake Roberts over Billy Black. Shelby, North Carolina.
Goodness.
September 29th.
Did you ever go to any of the Marietta Smoky Mountain shows?
No.
Oh.
Here he is over Sal Corrente, a Super Vader in North Carolina.
What?
Then he didn't work at all in 1995 and came back Royal Rumble.
Wait, Sal Corrente as Super Vader?
Yeah. No, I guess he wore D-South 95, but they don't have results. So.
Sal Corrente as Super Vader?
Yeah.
Okay. That's peculiar.
How about the Armstrong heel run? I didn't think that would have worked out.
Yeah, I don't think it would have worked. I don't think it would have clicked with that audience. I think especially in a market that the Armstrongs had been in for so long, it would have had the whole hollow, you know, family feud that people don't buy thing going for it, I think, because the Armstrongs were always so close.
Yeah,
buy it.
The only way they could have done it, it would have been with somebody that hadn't been there, like Scott and Steve had been there fighting the wars. Brad, I think if they brought Brad in and he immediately turned heel, that would have been interesting.
Or if you bring in Brian and have him do like a version of the Owen Hart
thing. Yeah. That could have been good.
But also Brad had been in Continental though. So I think Brian's the one who it would work best with them because he's the one that no one really knows well.
Yeah. Now, July 5th tape is in Warrensburg, North Carolina. Chris Candido won the TV title, beating Scott Studd, Scotty Riggs to become the new champion.
Great Twitter follow.
Yeah, Tracy Smothers had was the champion, but he ran his course and had to set a new champion.
He won his $5,000.
Yeah, he won his $5,000. And a new tag team debuted on these tapings. New Jack and Sheik Mustafa from North Georgia Wrestling Association debuted at the tapings as a heel tag team called the Gangsters.
No. What does it say?
They're gangsters. And they're going to get a strong push. Boy, I'll say.
Yeah. The Gangsters.
And of course, their TV show, their debut aired, I think, a week or two later.
Yeah.
But, yeah. If we're going to do Scott and Steve as heels and that falling through, this was ended up being a pretty good backup choice.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't work the way they wanted it to.
But... No, but it got them. It got them media. Let's put it that way.
Yes. I guess you couldn't have really predicted just the way it would turn out, where it was like that the fan base, it wasn't that they hated them so much they wanted to see them beat up, it was that they hated them so much they didn't even want to, what's the word I'm looking for? Just go to the shows that they were at.
They didn't want to pay for it. Yeah, they had go away heat. Yeah, it was definitely interesting to look at the results and stuff and see how it was. Now, do we want to play the clips or not from this? Or
I think we are, right, of the Thrill Seekers.
Yes. One thing that's not mentioned is they did an angle coming off of those shows in Knoxville. The Thrill Seekers, Lance Storm and Chris Jericho, being jumped in the parking lot by a mysterious group. And we have the TV version of that here.
I mean, I have to do commentary because I'm not sure how much of
that. Yeah, because there's the part where they got beat up, is there's no announcement.
Well, fans, unfortunately, what happened next after that was not a laughing matter. No, indeed. The Thrill Seekers arrived at the arena for a match a few days ago, and they were attacked by Jim Cornette and two masked men. A fan now with a video camera was getting tape of the wrestlers as they were arriving at the arena, and they caught the attack on tape. So let's take a look and see what she taped.
Let's go to David Bix's band live at the scene.
Oh, the little girl is getting an autograph from referee Mark Curtis. Beat up car pulls in the background.
Did you tell him thanks? Hey, look, let's go. Pose with him. He's going to pose with you. Get over there. Stand beside him, Ashley. There you go. Smile now.
Thrill Seekers are getting out of their car.
There you go. Look, kids, it's the Thrill Seekers. Go get their autographs. Hurry, kids, come here. Hurry. Ashley, Derek, come here. Hurry. Come here. Oh, my God.
Help!
They nailed Mark Curtis. Cornette is wearing his trademark 90s combination of a black t-shirt and Zubaz.
Yes.
And he is also holding the tennis racket directing traffic.
Of course.
Something satisfying about seeing Chris Jericho punted in the ribs.
He's selling.
You know, Jim Cornette can say what he wants, but we all know it. Chris and I know it, and the Smoky Mountain wrestling fans know it.
Can I be serious for a moment?
Bodies that beat us up in that parking lot, and thanks to that fans videotape, we've got proof. Jim Cornette even called the one Tom. We know it was a heavenly
body. Is that the Wob robot from Small Wonder?
Chris took 18 stitches in the back of his head, and my face has looked better. But, you know, the heavenly bodies are really great, but we're not going to roll over and play dead for anybody.
That's right, you know. Heavenly bodies, you were banned from Smoky Mountain Wrestling when you lost the Bluegrass Brawl at Rock and Roll Express. And now you want to come back into Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Well, you know, we could take this to court. We could file a grievance. But first of all, Jim Cornette would probably tie it up for weeks, months, years. Second of all, that's not how we want to decide this thing. You know, the only thing we could think to do legally to get you guys back in the ring is talk to Smoky Mountain Wrestling, who in turn talked to the World Wrestling Federation, who in turn told you that you had to come back to Smoky Mountain Wrestling for a week.
Intern.
And if a week is all we got, that's fine.
Intern.
There's two
things in this world that don't forget. Elephants and thrill seekers. And we're not going to forget what you guys did to us, heavenly bodies. And I'll tell you something else. You made a mistake. Because you came and jumped us from behind. You beat us up. We're the first to admit you guys did a hell of a job. But let me tell you something. You didn't put us in the morgue. You didn't put us in the hospital. And therefore, you made a mistake. Because we're still alive and kicking. And believe me when I tell you that we might be flying all around. We might have new moves that you've never seen before. But we can fight. And we're here to say that coming up, we're going to take you guys and we're going to kick you like you've never been kicked before. Because we're not going to let you forget about this, because we're not going to forget about it. And none of the fans are going to forget about this either. So, Jim, heavenly bodies, you watch out, because we will have our revenge and it's going to be really sweet.
You know, it happens to every great labor organizer, every great...
By the way, I wonder if one of those new moves they've never seen before was the Shooting Star Press.
Union boss, whenever you start getting a little power...
This is in front of the photographer's backdrop that the WWF would use for local promos, by the way.
I missed that.
The false accusations start happening to Jimmy Hoffa. Now I'm being accused of being responsible for things that I had nothing to do with. Sure, the thrill seekers got attacked in a parking lot. Hey, that's not my fault. It was two guys in masks that did it, but now they're claiming that I was responsible for it, that the heavenly bodies were the guys under the masks. And thanks to some snoopy old lady trying to get autographs for a little snot-nosed brat kid with a video camera, they got a tape of it. You know, it's that kind of snoopiness in America today that got those fine, upstanding Los Angeles police officers in hot water for trying to arrest that convicted felon Rodney King. But if you'll notice, on that tape, it clearly shows that I was the one trying to pull those guys off the thrill seekers. I was the one trying to call those guys back because I knew that Storm and Jericho couldn't sustain any worse of a beating than they were already taken. But no, no, they can't let it lie. You know, thrill seekers, there's an old saying, be careful what you ask for because you just might get it. They went to the promoters in Smoky Mountain Wrestling, all the officials. Smoky Mountain Wrestling came to the World Wrestling Federation. Two big corporations getting in some kind of hoo-ha, some kind of collusion against a labor union, just like always happens. And now the result is that the World Wrestling Federation has said that they're not going to sign any matches featuring the Heavenly Bodies for the period of August 5th to August 13th. They're going to force the Heavenly Bodies, under threat of a heavy fine, to go back to Smoky Mountain Wrestling to meet the thrill seekers anytime, any place, anywhere that they want. So the thrill seekers can get their revenge. They don't want to do it in a court of law because they haven't got any evidence. No, they want to get the heavenly bodies in a wrestling ring. Well, let me tell you something, punks, and I want you to listen real good. The heavenly bodies are coming back to Smoky Mountain Wrestling. The ban hasn't been lifted, but for one shining, glorious week, thrill seekers. The
Golden Week. Bodies,
Dr. Desire, Tom Pritchard, and Gigolo Jimmy Del Rey, they're going to be back in Smoky Mountain Wrestling to teach you punks a lesson. Sure, you've had all the flashy videos. You got all the fancy Dan moves. You got those pretty faces, and all the fans are cheering for you. But now we're going to find out if you got guts, thrill seekers. This is your acid test. This is your chance of a lifetime. Because these men dominated Smoky Mountain Wrestling on some very basic principles. Blood, guts, violence, and intimidation. And you've had some wins over some mid-level teams. You've done a few nice things. But when you get in the ring with the heavenly bodies, you're in there against the guys that have been there many times. You're in there against the cream of the crop. You're in there against a couple of guys that'll stop at nothing to end your career and send you on your way, because they ain't rolling over and playing dead for nobody. They got reputation to uphold. So, thrill seekers, we're going to find out if you've got it in here, brother, if you've got the heart and the desire to be on top, to be main eventers, to be championship material. Because the heavenly bodies are going to give you the damnedest fight that you've ever been in your life. And I don't think you're going to win it. Thrill seekers, you asked for them, you got them. What are you going to do with them?
Thank you, James E. Cornette. All right.
By the way, you don't get the full effect of the promo without seeing Dr. Tom and Gigolo Jimmy's reactions in the background.
Of course, Dr. Tom's doing his hair. And Jimmy, of course, is doing what he does.
You know what? He does kind of look like Chris Walker, now that I watch this.
In a way.
It's more than just the hair. It's not just the hair.
Yeah. All right, USWA, let's go to the other side of the state. On July 9th, and we wanted this for clips, but the show that's on YouTube has basically zero sound. So it's there, you just can't hear it. TV on July 9th opened with PG-13 defending the so-called Wing Tag Team Trophy against the Masters of the Orient, Takashi Okano and Nobutaka Araya, who were in their last USWA match before returning to IWA Japan for their tour that starts on July 14th. PG-13 won the match. After the match, the Eliminators came out and challenged them, and they got into a brawl, which saw the Eliminators bust the Wing Trophy. Oh, my God. Now, speaking of the Eliminators, they shot some publicity photos with Harvey Whippleman as their manager, which apparently means they'll be getting the shot with WWF, which is a surprise that one of the two, the one who isn't Perry Saturn, has only been wrestling for a few months and is still really green. Of course, he's talking about John Cronus. The Eliminators did get a tryout.
There are reasons that he's pretty green besides that don't actually have to do with his experience in the pro wrestling business.
Yeah, but they did get a tryout, you know?
Yeah.
Didn't get signed, but...
Sure.
That's interesting.
I don't think they were ready at this point. But
No. No, they were not ready.
Saturn was either.
No, they weren't ready. They weren't ready. Brian Christopher then challenged the Dream Machine, which ended with Doug Gilbert interfering, followed by Moondog Spot with garbage cans and boards. Tommy Rich, and finally the return of manager Scott Bowden, who gave Gilbert a bottle, which he broke over Christopher's head. Finally, PG-13 did an interview with J.C. Ash talking about being the son of Bill Dundee and said he'd be just like his father, small and none of the other wrestlers, but willing to take a beating and come out the winner. Now, Burt Prentice missed all his weekend shots and may or may not come back.
Why? Is he starting a new promotion?
I think he was.
By the way, that reminds me, I got to get a Roku because now seeing that High Spots On Demand has Ozark Mountain Wrestling for some reason, I think that's going to get me to subscribe.
Yeah, I got Roku, but I just don't have the High Spots On Demand, so I need to get on that myself. All right, July 11th at Mid-South Coliseum, here's what we have. Boy, this sounds like a dream match. Jeff Gaylord over Bullman Downs, Bix.
Yeah, I saw Leon Downs. That's Bullman Downs?
Yeah.
My God. What was the end of Jeff Gaylord? He wasn't around too long after this, right?
Yeah, early 95, maybe. Reggie B. Fine defeated Tony Williams. Bart Sawyer defeated Tony Falk. Doug Basham over the Spellbinder. Yeah, Del Rios. USWA tag titles, PG-13 over the Eliminators by disqualification. Brian Christopher won back the USWA heavyweight title from the Dream Machine.
That's the former Southern heavyweight title.
Yeah. Barbed wire match, Tommy Rich over Jerry King Lawler, which I would love to see in that. And a six-man tag match of Doug Gilbert, Dream Machine, and Tommy Rich over Brian Christopher and the Moondogs, which at this point was Spike and Spot.
And Spike is Bill Smithson?
Yes. Okay. So, yeah. USWA, some fun things going on, as usual.
And Rami, what other name would I know Bill Smithson by?
Bill Smithson.
Thanks.
That's what you were heard, Bill Smithson.
No, but didn't he have a... Oh, was he... but Spike was... Spike was the main post-Rex Moondog partner, right?
Yes.
Spot and Spike were the initial USWA Moondogs, right?
Yes.
And then
Cujo was Lanny Keene, excuse me.
And there was also Splat.
Yes, Bill Smithson was also Dizzy Golden for Texas All-Star team with Mike Golden. You remember that?
Vaguely.
Competing with the Dream Team, Iceman Parsons and Tiger Conway Jr.
Oh, he's tag team partners with Jerry Ralph.
He was Bluey, Bix. He was George Barnes' tag partner.
I don't remember that.
And during the feud with Dundee.
I don't remember Bluey.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yep.
Oh, and he worked for the Savoldis too? I'm looking at Wikipedia?
Yeah. Yeah.
Had different tag title reigns with Moondog Spot and the Dungeon Master.
Yes. All right, Potpourri. It seems like a kind of, I don't want to say a running topic, but something we talked about before. The debut taping of Jim Crockett Promotions will be on July 26th, but it's already been moved to Chattanooga rather than Rainesville, Alabama, as reported here in the Wrestling Observer last week. Joe Pedicino will be handling the play-by-play, with Tully Blanchard doing color. Because of Blanchard's religious work, he's going to play a babyface announcer role. Bonnie Blackstone will do the interviews. No word on talent other than it's expected that the Rock and Roll Express and Jim Cornette will be there from Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and that Crockett is going to use Tommy Rich and Junkyard Dog as his top baby faces, which doesn't sound exactly promising on the surface. The name Ole Anderson continues to surface as being part of this, but But Anderson is still on contract with WCW working at training school.
Not for long.
Not for long. The group will be called NWA, and they may run a tournament that night to determine the NWA World Tag Team Champions. They want to have an NWA champion for the first taping. Shane Douglas was offered the role, but supposedly the money, reportedly $150 per shot, may not be enough to get him to come in.
Well, also, Shane is still working as a teacher at this point, right?
Yeah.
And ECW just happened to be someplace that was offering enough money while also being within driving distance of his house.
Yes. And then you had this whole deal that was coming up soon with the NWA.
Yes.
Now, I don't remember. Okay. Have you seen any of this stuff? Because I do not remember. Do not remember it at all.
In general, including the Dallas stuff or just the first taping from Chattanooga?
Yeah.
Well, you got this stuff on TV in the Pedicino block, didn't you?
But I don't remember at all.
I haven't seen much. I remember them calling Mondo Guerrero Armando Guerrero.
Yeah. I don't remember at all. All right, Crockett talked to wrestling columnist Ron Jordan about his plans and said, quote, "We're going to try to give them a different style of wrestling that's currently available," unquote. "We're not going to be recreating the past. Michael J. Fox could go back to the past, but we won't." Interesting.
Is that the promotion that also decided not to have entrance music for anything but the main event?
Yes. All right. The Shoot Style Game promotion in Los Angeles.
One of the best acronyms ever, Great American Mad Endeavors.
Yes. Continues to run at Yohan Plaza in Los Angeles in Japantown with biweekly shows. Next one being July 16th. From the reports from the Observer, some of the matches are definitely shoots, but the guys getting busted and bruised up, and some of them are work shoots. Those who attend have been extremely complimentary. But who was the biggest names that worked here?
Superboy.
Yes.
Under his real name, and did shoots. Kurt Brown.
Yes.
There was an Al Snow Dan Severn match that Art Davey attended that led to Severn being in UFC 4.
There you go.
There used to be the results somewhere online. Kurt Brown, I think, had one shoot match for some reason.
Especially if you know Kurt. That's weird.
Yes. I feel like it was a lot of Los Angeles indie guys primarily, I think. And I'm trying to think, is there any like other like weird shooter types? Like, I would guess that Tim Renesto was involved, was on them maybe too.
I'm pretty sure there was.
If I Google Great American Mad Endeavors, how much do you actually find? Let's see. It's mostly stuff about Severn. The Art Davey scouting thing. Great American Mad. Yeah. I can't think. I'm not finding much else. I know there used to be a list of the results. But I can't find any of this stuff right now. Oh, Mike Quackenbush had some involvement with Game. That's right.
Interesting.
Yeah. I hope someone shot up. No. I guess we should move on.
So let's move on to the World Wrestling Federation. And boy, what a week this was for them.
I'll say.
And we'll talk about that at the end of the show. Raw, on July 11th, featured the return of Jim Ross, which was what had to be tough for both sides to agree to, as he had agreed to a two-month contract to fill Vince McMahon's announcing role until after the trial. Ross, still suffering slight paralysis of the face, may have greater market value with WCW after its high-profile 2 months announcing that superstars in Raw. The WWF was unhappy with Gorilla Monsoon's announcing performances.
Will you stop? Actually, wait, don't I have a will you stop? Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
It was interesting, though. I liked the Monsoon-Johnny Polo team, but Monsoon really went down quick.
Yeah, I mean, he needed the right partner. Who did he do Raw with? Savage?
Yeah.
They didn't mesh.
No. I mean, if you watch Coliseum videos, if he's not working with Johnny Polo, him and Stan Lane were together. It was kind of odd.
That was okay, though.
Yeah, it was okay, but it was odd. DiBiase and him were together. It was all right. I guess he needed that heel to play off of at this stage.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing quite as strange and Clash of the New Generation, everything else is. Gorilla Monsoon and Randy Savage calling a number one contender match between 1-2-3 Kid and Nikolai Volkoff.
Wow. Which led to 1-2-3 Kid getting a title shot against Bret Hart on this episode of Raw. And this was taped at what, Fernwood?
Yes, Fernwood Resort.
Not Fernwood Tonight with Martin Mull and Fred Willard.
Although the set from that appeared to show up during the final deletion last week.
Yes, it sure did. Bret Hart defeated the 1-2-3 Kid by submission with the sharpshooter at around the 25-minute mark after the challenger missed a dive off the top rope. Prior to the match, Owen Hart and Jim Neidhart came out and climbed with the apron but were ejected. Hart originally won the match, but asked for the bout to continue since the challenger's foot was on the bottom rope during the cover. After the match, the two men embraced out of respect. Speaking of, Crush pinned Matt Hardy with a Tilt-A-Whirl Backbreaker in 148.
The first deletion.
Yes. Razor Ramon pinned Barry Horowitz with an inside cradle of 253. And IRS pinned Ray Hudson with the penalty at 348.
How excited were you for Kid Brad at the time?
It was a fresh match. It was cool. I wish they would have met around the main event.
Well, we're all open with the main event back then a lot of the time.
Yeah, but I wish it was the last match. It was one of the best TV matches of this time period, for sure.
Sure.
And Waltman, you know, was really strong in this era. So, yeah, I really liked this match a lot.
Yeah, this is probably the best match on Raw up to this point, right?
Up to that point? If it wasn't the best, it was right there, yeah.
I mean, the other contenders would be what? The Jannetty and Michaels matches?
Yes. That would be up there.
Jannetty Bigelow?
That would be around, yeah.
Oh, and I'm forgetting a couple. I'm forgetting. Doink Perfect.
Yes.
And I'm forgetting. Quebec Ruse against Kid and Jannetty.
Great, yeah. It's Gap, yeah.
It's probably the class of the Raw matches.
Yeah, up until in this time period, yeah.
And actually, wait, had the weirdly good Jeff Jarrett Tatanka match happened yet?
I don't think it had happened yet. Okay. So.
You know the match I'm talking about, right?
I remember a match being pretty good, yeah. Now, business was poor, as largely was match quality on the weekend house shows. Meadowlands show drew about 4,000. Nassau Coliseum drew about 3,100, which that show is on YouTube in its entirety. Land of Maryland, about 1,800.
Ooh, at the Cowboys.
Both New York shows were headlined by marathon matches with Brett versus Owen. In both cases, Brett won 3-2, with Owen taking a 2-1 lead and Brett coming back. At the Meadowlands, Brett got the sharpshooter on with 5 seconds left to win the fifth fall. At Nassau, they were tied at the end of 60 minutes with Brett winning the sudden death period. Which, around 1975, WF Booker Pat Patterson, when he was U.S. heavyweight champion, had a classic Cowpals main event against Don Morocco in a marathon match with the same sudden death finish. Amazing how that works out, isn't it? Nobody was raving about the matches, even though the 60 minutes was legit. Brett submitted twice both nights. Really, as far as reports from house shows go, Brett and Owen has to be considered a major disappointment of the year as far as match quality goes.
It's been a long time since I've seen that Nassau match, but
it's on YouTube.
I remember most people really liking that match.
I thought it was a really good match, considering it was 60 minutes.
Yeah. Nassau Coliseum does not sound like the right place. Good.
No.
To do an hour match.
So. No. No, it does not. All right, so over the weekend, the Head Shrinkers title defense is against the Heavenly Bodies,
man. Not because it's near a black neighborhood. That's because we were talking about that earlier. That's different.
The Head Shrinkers title defense against the Heavenly Bodies matches were switched.
It might sound that way.
We're switched to Shrinkers defending against Double Trouble. Since Jimmy Ray is still injured, Double Trouble was?
The Undertakers, Val and Tony Puccio.
Yes.
Who they gained a lot of weight.
And they were getting WWF tag title defenses.
As part of whatever, I mean, I'm sure this was tied to whatever thing there was with the whole Undertaker's deal.
Amazing. Oh, there's been serious discussion of bringing Chris Benoit in full-time as part of a push babyface tag team. Yeah, Benoit was linked here for a while.
And he got the tryouts a year later.
Got tryout a year later, and then went WCW. But yeah, I wonder who they would have had him as a tag partner with.
Owen? Well, no, but he, not as, he, as baby faces. I don't know.
Maybe Kid?
Maybe. Also, yeah. Remember, when he came and did those tryouts, the WWF was willing to let him keep New Japan. It was New Japan that next did.
Yeah. I think we talked about that on the show.
Yeah.
Apparently, there's been mentions on television, not to mention in the magazine, and on pizza boxes of Undertaker versus Undertaker, even though there's a storyline. Even though it's a storyline had advanced on television, fans aren't supposed to know that there are two of them. Usually, this kind of television not being caught up with every other form of publicity doesn't happen here.
Yeah, this was weird.
Yeah, it was. This was definitely them not. This was a WCW moment for them.
And I mean, I remember they ended up doing it. They started just being like, and now the main event for SummerSlam is apparently The Undertaker versus The Undertaker. We don't know what this means. That's kind of how they did it, right?
Yeah, and then Leslie Nielsen shows up and.
George Kennedy?
Yes, George Kennedy shows up.
No OJ, though.
No Norberg.
Don't know where he is.
No, he's in the gas chamber. No. But, that one always seemed cold to me. You know, it just showed up. You know, there was no build up for the Undertaker's return. Just here it is.
Had fake Undertaker even been on TV yet when it first came up?
I think so.
I'm not sure.
I mean, if I remember right, fake Undertaker was on a good month before SummerSlam.
I'd have to look.
Let me see here.
Also, one of the worst things about that summer was Todd Pettengill singing the Gotta Be Domino song in every SummerSlam update.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had the Undertaker sightings at a swimming pool, gas station, donut shop. They remember those videos when they did that in May?
Yeah.
Ted DiBiase's Undertaker, May 24th.
Okay.
Vladimir Koloff also on that show on May 24th. Remember that?
Do a good dark match?
I guess beating John Paul. Okay. Undertaker's at Heartbreak Hotel on the June 11th episode of Wrestling Challenge. This is the TV debut. Taped on May 25th. So there you go.
Well, there you go.
There you go. There may be some questions as to whether Bruce Hart will be appearing at shows in Brett's Corner for matches with Owen, who would have Jim Neidhart in the quarter. On last week's promos for the California shows, they mentioned Bruce being there. This week, it was just said that Brett may have a family member in the corner with a graphic shown of Bruce.
Well, if you were to just try to form a mental image of generic Hart family member, I guess you would form an image that looks like Bruce.
Yeah. Oh, Bruce. Remember we talked about WCW's anti-violence deal? Well, WWF has it too. WWF has gotten stricter lately with what it will allow on television, given the recent anti-violence trend in this country on television. The smoking guns are no longer allowed to shoot off cap guns. Razor Ramon can no longer flick his toothpick at the camera, which this is Wade Keller saying,
yeah,
seriously.
Yeah, I recognize this, yeah.
And obviously, garbage cans cannot be used as weapons. Apparently, Lawler did not get proper clearance to use the trash can. And there was legitimate heat from management, in this case McMahon, for the violent nature of Lawler's attack of Duke the Dumpster Drosy.
Yeah, I mean, we
it was weird.
Yeah.
It was just a weird deal at the time where people were really kind of freaking out over nothing that really, I mean, imagine that back then. And think about it, if stuff was going on now like it is with that mindset back then. Crazy. For those who listen to the WWF radio show, the regular caller who goes by the name Disco Inferno is Glenn Gilberti. the Georgia indie wrestler who used the Disco Inferno name in Memphis. He's friends with Johnny Polo. Of course. They work together. They work together in Georgia. Again, WF Radio, I've listened to a couple of times. I couldn't really get it.
Yeah, it wasn't on WSB, right? It wasn't on in Atlanta.
No, I was picking it up out somewhere up north. So I don't remember any of this stuff. So it's interesting though that he was calling the radio show
as Disco Inferno.
As Disco Inferno.
And also, this says Glenn Gilbernetti, which everyone thought was his real name for years for some reason.
Yeah.
Did he ever wrestle as Glenn Gilbernetti?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
All right. Now let's talk about the trial. Bix, you know, this we thought about doing this thing on this show, and it's way too long to do with the rest of the stuff that we got going on. So we decided to, you know, talk about it just a tad, but you have irons in the fire that you're working on. So, you know, we can get more information down the road. So just tell everybody basic stuff about the trial and what you're looking into.
Well, I mean, what I'm looking into is I did a Freedom of Information request to the Department of Justice to see if I can get like their whole case file on this. So I know they've gotten it. They acknowledge that they got it. I mean, we'll see if I get anything. I mean, let's see. I mean, we want to cover some of this, obviously, since this is the big story of the week. But since also it's part of the trial and not the whole trial, we kind of don't want to cover too much. Maybe we'll eventually do an exile, you know, something. So the highlights start with the jury selection, which was I'll read what Wade Keller wrote, since I believe Wade Keller was the only wrestling writer that was there for the whole trial. So the Torch is kind of the go-to for that.
Yeah, Dave was really leaning on Wade heavily here, too.
Yes. I believe Bruce Mitchell went for part two, and Bruce and Wade went to the Nassau Coliseum show together.
Yeah. The Brett Owen show.
Yeah. After dismissing several jurors who thought that because wrestling was, quote, fake, that somehow this trial was, too, the judge said, "Do not question whether wrestling is sports or entertainment. It's not whether wrestling is pure entertainment or sport. The only issue at stake is the case of distribution to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. This is the substance, not whether wrestling is phony or sports or entertainment."
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what happens when you get people who can't get out of jury duty, I guess.
Yeah, I'll say.
I've actually made a pledge now that if the next time I get jury duty for a criminal, you know, for an actual trial, I would take it. I did skip jury duty the last time because it was a grand jury, because grand juries always go the same way. But if I actually get it for like a criminal or a civil trial and it's not something that would take up too much of my time, I kind of feel like I need to do it just because of that whole kind of self-selecting thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let's see. The beginning of
I've never done jury duty in my life. How about that?
Me neither. Judge Missler on July 6th opened by angrily telling Jerry McDevitt that, quote, for the 10th time, he refused to throw out the case based on the jurisdictional argument, which was, it all had to do with whether or not there were steroids being delivered to the Nassau Coliseum, I guess. Oh, no, it wasn't just that. It was also that Zahorian used a Nassau County pharmacy, I believe. So there was that. So let's
not and we're not talking about Dr. Death's suitcase.
No, we're talking about an actual pharmacy. I mean, there's a lot here. I mean,
there's a lot.
Everyone needs to read the Torch coverage of the trial. You probably don't understand the trial.
Go to Torch VIP to get it, because I mean, it's well worth it just for that.
Yeah.
Great stuff by Way there.
It's mostly in the double issue that covers the trial, but there's also some stuff coming, like, in the week before or the week after. You know, they've got the opening statements. Should I do a control F for McDevitt? Because that's probably more interesting. Introducing Vince Linda and Laura Brevetti, who is a co-counsel to the jury.
The great Laura Brevetti.
Yes, now, what is her official title? Because she works for WWE directly now.
She's
like their head counsel, right? I mean,
yeah.
In you know, with the House Counsel. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, I guess we should we talk about what's in our week? Because really, so the most interesting stuff, not all of it's in our week. So that's part of what's tricky here.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think? I mean, what's, you know, let's just talk. What stands out to you about the trial coverage and the stuff you've read?
Well, I mean, you all right? You have testimony from the both Moon Dogs.
No, it's not both Moon Dogs. It's just Randy Cully.
Well,
I don't think Larry Latham testified.
You sure about that?
Yes. Or Larry Booker, excuse me.
We have Tom Zink, the Warlord, and Tully Blanchard. So, I mean, Spot didn't testify, but he was talking about, you know, Spot. And it's like, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about steroids. Zink, you know, talking about how he began using steroids before he went to WWF, and then, of course, he used it in wrestling.
He said he generally didn't get them from Zahorian, too, right?
No.
And then, of course, this all led to the, I think it was during, what's her face? Why am I forgetting her name all of a sudden? Why am I forgetting her name all of a sudden? The criminal, the defense attorney. That's not Vic Tevin. We just said her name.
Laura Bavetti.
Laura Bavetti. She says something about Zank being someone who would take steroids out of a garbage can.
Yeah.
I mean, here's some, let's, you know, I'm starting to skim through the testimony. You know, Randy Colley, Moondog Rex, saying that Zahorian would ask, that the road agents would tell wrestlers to see Zahorian if you looked like you were worn out. Mr. McMahon was in proximity at times, and he saw Vince talk with Zahorian. He said McMahon told his partner, Mr. Booker, Moondog Spot, in 1986, that he wasn't looking quite like the type of athlete he likes.
Yeah.
Colley said he was taking steroids, and McMahon didn't complain about his look, but his partner only, quote, played around, but wasn't dedicated to steroids.
The thing about Colley is he used steroids in WCW 1987. He was not in WCW 1987.
Right, that was a little strange. When prosecutor Sean O'Shea asked Colley what he believed McMahon to mean when he talked about his partner, the defense objected and the judge sustained. When Hershey was... Here's something I never understood when reading about the case. What is everyone talking about with Hershey being someplace they taped every 3 weeks? They never taped at Hershey every 3 weeks.
No.
It was...
Zink admitting that he never took steroids in WCW because they had a policy against it, but after his contract expired, he began taking steroids again.
Yep.
And as recently as 3 weeks before the trial.
Colley testifying under oath about that he ended up, you know, losing the demolition gig because the fans recognized my nose and chanted Moondog. At WCW in 1987. Let's see. Said Zahorian was in the locker room distributing steroids sometimes, and other times he was in a separate room. McDevitt held up a brown paper bag. Colley said Zahorians were bigger.
Oh, man.
My God. You know, bringing up that he had sued them, talking about advances and using them to buy steroids. Zank said he left WWF on bad terms. He said he told Linda he wasn't happy with the money. So on July 10th, 1987, he just walked out on his contract. He said when he was contacted by All Japan, Linda and Titan found out and wrote him demanding a percentage of his income because of their investment in him. Zank said, I told them I have the New York Times phone number in front of me. How would you like me to call them and tell them you sell your product of men on steroids to kids? She said, I don't think that would be a good idea. I took it as a threat. Zank laughed when asked if he was subpoenaed as a witness. Yes, I was. Zank had to miss it, part of his All Japan tour to be present. Definitely did not want to testify. On cross. Oh, yeah, this is one of the more interesting parts, actually. McDevitt asked Zank if he was on drugs at the... Zank admitted he called the McMahon residence at 2 a.m. about 3 weeks earlier. How did he get their home phone number?
Who knows?
McDevitt asked Zank if he was on drugs at the time of the call. Zank said no. Zank said he asked Linda why they were still tormenting him after 7 years. McDevitt pointed out the irony of the phone call. You called the McMahons even though the government subpoenaed you? Zink said that was correct. Said he got trouble for steroid possession while in WCW, but it was only a first offense. Zink said McMahon never asked him to use steroids. You could buy it at gyms or from physicians, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, when after his contract expired on May 16th, he began taking steroids and did as recently as 3 weeks ago. He comes off strangely here, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Perhaps predicting the future with the... What did he actually get arrested for, do we know? What the current bald version of Tom Zink ended up in?
I don't know.
You've seen those photos, right?
Yeah.
Those mugshots. Oh, this is one of the things that always struck me as weird. Warlord's testimony. On cross-examination by McDevitt, Szczynski said he weighed 195 pounds for steroids and now weighs 305. And he talked about how he hadn't been able to drop the weight after getting off steroids, which, sure. Tully Blanchard said steroid use in the NWA was, quote, pretty close to the WWF at the time.
I can't believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, you watch television, you see Road Warriors, Luger, Powers Payne, Russian Assassins.
McDevitt asked, did you ever sit around and plot and scheme to defraud the FDA? Because that was one of the charges. So Horian said no, because it was alleged that he conspired with McMahon. Wrestlers that he did not distribute to, do you remember this list?
Yes.
Let's see if you can remember who was on this.
Nikolai Volkoff.
Yes.
Brian Blair.
No, Brian Blair testified at the Zahorian trial. What are you talking?
Not Brian Blair. Mike Rotunda.
Yes.
George Animal Steel.
Yes.
Bob Backlund.
Yes.
Sergeant Slaughter.
Yes.
One of the Rougeaus. Ray.
Yes.
King Kong Bundy.
Yes. Do you remember what Zahorian said about him?
Did he say he was like a diabetic or something?
Yes.
Tugboat.
Actually, it's two more. Yes, Tugboat.
And one of the sheep herders.
Yes.
Butch.
Yes. Did you really do that all from memory?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
I do remember some things.
Very good. That was impressive, actually. Very good.
I do remember some things. Some stuff is easy to come to me.
So is that yet, all of them? Is that is that everyone that he didn't distribute?
That's not everyone.
He still stole steroids by mail. After he was warned about the investigation, including to the guy who they used to bust him, a strength coach, Bill Dunn, not the WWF announcer, Bill Dunn, B. Brian Blair, Eddie Gilbert, and others. Trying to establish his whole thing about how he wanted to make sure the wrestlers didn't take tainted steroids. Randy Savage came to his office and purchased steroids. Brevetti asked Zahorian if the big photo of him, Hogan, and McMahon the prosecution showed was taken at the time when there was a meeting of the if it was a meeting of the minds concerning the alleged conspiracy, and so on and so forth. Then there was more for him. Rick Rude testified. The whole thing was the story that, you know, Brevetti just kind of ate him up on cross about the story that he had told for years, that Vince had told him that he had to get back on steroids when he got off for when he was trying to have a baby with his wife. Nails, let's talk about Nails.
Yeah, so let's talk about Kevin Wackholt.
Do you remember what he testified to that was very obviously perjury?
I remember he talked about the Rude meeting.
He said he witnessed the Rude meeting.
Yeah. And then, wasn't it about the camper trailer with Vince?
What? What do you mean?
Kevin Wackholt's meeting Vince in the camper.
I don't know about that. But do you remember what he said that was an obvious, provable, bold-faced lie that Wade Keller then complained about on the local news?
Not taking steroids?
Oh, no. Think about this. What would be obviously provably false that he would have testified to? Okay, you give up?
I'm blanking on that one.
McDevitt asked Wackles to describe his outfit in WWF. Did it
reveal
musculature? Yes, it did.
Yes, that's right. Of course, he was wearing a Dickie suit.
Yeah, and then I remember I've seen news footage of Wade on the local news pantomiming to the camera the bagginess of the nails con.
Yes, that's right. I forgot about that.
Let's see. Patterson didn't remember anything, of course.
Of course not.
Yeah, just they tried to frame him as like this down on his luck old wrestler that they gave a middle management job to just as a favor.
Yeah.
Which was curious. Anita Scales, who was their director.
That's the week after. I mean, that's the first day.
Is Anita Scales at the beginning of next week?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's, you get the gist. Read this all of the torch. I guess we should briefly talk about Emily Feinberg, even though that's the following week.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll let you explain Emily Feinberg. Emily Arth.
Not Emily Arthur. Emily Feinberg was Zaharian's secretary.
No, Vince's secretary.
Vince's secretary, excuse me. And she was got all the packages. And boy, did she become a major player in this case. Oh, yes. Man. She worked for Vince for what, like 4 years maybe? 4 or 5 years?
Yeah.
She really wasn't Vince's secretary at first. Didn't she work for Dick Glover?
I think so, yes.
And then became Vince's executive assistant.
Who tracked all of his steroid usage.
Yes.
Quoting Feinberg, Vince wanted me to order a certain gauge and more steroids and 4 bottles of HCD, because often when you take steroids for a while, your testicles shrink and need HCD to get back to regular size. Bruce Mitchell noted in one of his columns, I forget if it's in this issue, Linda started bawling during this part of the testimony. I have no idea why. No idea. Right? Just coincidence,
yeah.
Right?
Just coincidence, yeah. Oh, well. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, I remember they went, she was very explicit in what she was ordering steroid wise.
She kept notes of everything.
Yeah. Yeah,
this came before Stringer Bell, so obviously she didn't learn the important lessons about taking notes on a criminal conspiracy.
Then Dave was saying that Vince didn't use steroids until 1989, which that's hilarious. Yes. Look at Vince before then.
When do you think he started using steroids?
84 to 85.
At the early. Possibly just started lifting then, though.
Are you kidding me? No.
Have to look back.
They talk about her being modeling work or something like that.
Yeah. About Jim Stewart, the limo driver, who's going to be one of the witnesses and then disappeared.
Yeah.
Brevetti established Vince told Feinberg that Hogan taught him about steroids while in Atlanta, the filming No Holds Barred.
Yeah.
Feinberg said McMahon never asked her to order steroids for any other wrestler other than Hogan. She said she never heard McMahon encourage another wrestler to use steroids. She said the last time she saw Vince's driver, Jim Stewart, was in May of 91, and that about 4 months ago she spoke with Stewart on the phone when by chance he answered her call to a limo service. Brevetti said, so he was alive as of then. Wade then notes, no one seemed to know what that meant.
Yeah, and Emily Feinberg, yeah.
And then there's the whole thing. I'm trying to remember. Did we cover the whole Village Voice New York Post article?
Thing? Yes. One,
yes, we did.
Yes. Yes.
Which episode? Do you recall approximately what episode that? Whatever. That would be what? December 95 or something like that?
Yeah.
That was, in brief, the allegation was that Laura Brevetti had a secret husband.
Yes.
What was his name? Marty. Something Jewish, right?
Yeah, I can't remember. We did the show about it.
Posed as a TV producer to try to get information out of one Emily Feinberg.
Oh, yes.
Yes. What was Emily Feinberg's husband's job at WWF? Because she met him there. That's how she became Emily Feinberg. And not.
Don't remember.
Not just Emily Arth.
But Hogan testified, of course. And one of the first things he said, he was a complete liar. You know, say he started working for Capital Sports in 1978 when it was December 79.
Well, that's not. When you consider Hogan's memory, that's not so bad.
This is 1994.
Yeah, Hogan really does have a bad memory. He does. I mean.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, Hogan and Vince never looked at each other at all.
Yeah, although, I mean, Hogan ended up helping Vince, though.
Yeah.
His testimony did. Warrior testified the following week, more so than what he actually testified to. The famous part was him talking to the TV news cameras and saying, what is it? If your boss asked you to take off your clothes and have wild, passionate sex with him, you'd have the option to say no. Something like that, right?
Yeah, and then we had Big John Studd on telephone.
And no one would. Was it that? I'm trying to remember. Did the prosecution want to say why he was testifying by phone? And then McDevitt objected and got it that they wouldn't say?
Yeah, and the only thing they got was Sean O'Shea. There was no cross examination of Studd.
Yeah, because, I mean, I guess tying into the Hodgkin's disease.
And he's, you know, and he's lying about
his. He didn't really offer up much. I mean.
And he was wrong about his time there, too, which, you know, I can understand with him.
Oh, someone tweeted me earlier the photo, like when that famous then and now photo from the aftermaths of Studd looking like two different human beings.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
Yeah, he said he worked from WWF from 81 to 89, which, of course, wasn't true.
Yeah.
But, he was sick, so.
Oh, this is notable. O'Shea presented a document to Belay and asked him if that was a signature at the bottom of the page. Belay said no. A sidebar was called during which Hogan looked around nervously, very alone, very sad. He didn't look in the direction of McMahon. After the sidebar, the document was not brought up again. It is believed to have been the document regarding an HIV blood test taken for Belay by Howard Finkel in Oregon.
All right, let me just read Wade. All right, this is Wade talking about everything. If you had a vested interest or preference in Vince McMahon being found not guilty, you could have relished as Titan Sports attorney Jerry McDevitt engaged in what Laura Bravetti even described as at times tedious questioning of witnesses. If you had no vested interest but simply wanted to see facts established and the credibility or lack thereof of various witnesses tested, it was frustrating most of the time to watch McDevitt work. McDevitt knows the law. In a free-flowing debate, as was seen Friday, he can throw a barrage of facts your way, and you must be quick to refute them. The problem was McDevitt used that skill in an intellectually dishonest way during the trial, which led at least to a lot of wasted time. When McDevitt ran down a list of wrestlers who weren't on steroids while questioning Dr. George Zaharian, wrestlers who were barely consequential to WWF, in order to prove that you didn't need to be on steroids to work or even main event, WWF was a statistically deceiving approach. It should have been a waste of time, except prosecutor Sean O'Shea failed to establish that to the jury. When McDevitt tried to establish his better name, McMahon allowed a doctor to illegally dispense anabolic steroids to his wrestlers, because otherwise they might get bad steroids. It should have been a waste of time, but prosecutor O'Shea failed to establish that. When McDevitt got giddy over establishing that Dr. Zaharian was including former WWF wrestlers, when estimating that 97% of his customers were WWF wrestlers, it should have been a waste of time. McDevitt tried to call Zaharian a liar and insinuated he committed perjury. It should have been a waste of time. When McDevitt exaggerated the importance of Dr. Zaharian, not knowing which way he turned, left or right, when leaving the locker room to have infamous meeting with Vince McMahon and Pat Patterson, it should have been a waste of time. O'Shea didn't jump on it. Only in closing statements will O'Shea have a chance to establish that much of what McDevitt engaged in during his long, tedious, uncharismatic, bullying cross-examination of witnesses was irrelevant. Certainly would be dead wrong to rate a lawyer on charisma, but when lack of charisma is coupled with an unrelenting desire to bully witnesses with intellectual dishonesty, it is worthy of criticism. Cross-examination should not be rated on entertainment value or even brevity. But when the bulk of the questions are long-shot fishing expeditions or hammering home obvious or relevant points that the prosecution would grant them in the first place, it was a waste of everyone's time and the government's money. McDevitt was obviously not Judge Missler's favorite person. McDevitt's bullying, sometimes presumptuous style, caused the judge to interrupt him at times and informed the jury of the lack of relevance of what McDevitt was trying to establish. The judge, when the jury was not present, would mock McDevitt for his lack of efficiency when making his points. This could work against McMahon. If the jury grew as bored with McDevitt as they often appeared, they might turn against him. Since so much of what McDevitt was trying to do was simply to score points, no matter how irrelevant to the case, they made this count the relevant points he scored, and there were many. Perhaps a low point of the trial came at the end of the second week when McDevitt began quoting Dr. Gary Wilder's book blatantly out of context and using the rules of cross-examination to his benefit to force Wilder into yes or no situations when neither answer applied. McDevitt did his research with his approach to turnoff, not just to me, but I believe to the jury. The substance of the distribution counsel is addressed as well by both sides. The problem for the prosecution was the chain of events from Tahorian to McMahon to Emily Feinberg to Jim Stewart to Terry Bollea was only as strong as his weakest link. And Bollea was the weakest link, and all but eliminated any chance of conviction on either count. That proved to be moot after the judge dismissed counts two and three based on lack of jurisdiction. O'Shea argued vehemently that distribution began in the Eastern District when Zahorian ordered the drugs via phone from Rugby Darby on Long Island didn't hold up. But the substance of the first count was rarely addressed. In fact, the defense spent the better part of 2 weeks proving what the prosecution would have likely conceded from the beginning. The defense proved easily, albeit tediously, as Zahorian and McMahon did not get together and plot the formation of the circumstances that led to their mutually beneficial relationship. The defense spent a lot of time proving that McMahon really knew and never directly profited from Zahorian's sale of steroids to wrestlers under the contract with WWF. The defense spent a lot of time proving that the wrestlers can get steroids elsewhere. Therefore, they lead to the conclusion that a conspiracy was of no advantage to McMahon. The defense spent a lot of time proving Zahorian steroids were less dangerous than black market steroids. The defense spent a lot of time proving McMahon didn't originally cause Zaharian to set up shop in WF locker rooms because Zaharian was there due to the Athletic Commission requirements long before McMahon met him. The defense spent a lot of time proving that Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission knew of Zaharian's actions and didn't do anything about it. The defense spent a lot of time trying to establish that McMahon didn't know what the laws were because how could he conspire to break them? All of them, on the surface, appeared to be the defense shooting and scoring every time. The problem was none was a relevant point. The three relevant questions regarding the conspiracy count were, one, did McMahon, through action or omission, further the circumstances that put a fresh supply of steroids 10 feet away from where his wrestlers dressed? Two, did McMahon profit from that action or intentional omission of action? Three, if the above two are true, does that constitute a conspiracy according to the letter of the law? The prosecution failed to establish with the jury that they were not trying to prove what the defense was apparently refuting. The prosecution failed to establish that McMahon profited, or at least believed, he profited through an increased fan interest from his wrestlers being on steroids. Once the prosecution established clearly what they were trying to prove, the jury could have slept through most of the defense's cross-examination of witnesses. Instead, it was a game of scoring points. The defense definitely scored more points than the prosecution, partially because they led shots on goal, i.e. questions to the witnesses, by a 25-1 margin. Those who are scoring points without regard to relevancy to the charges put WF way ahead.
Isn't it fascinating hearing this a year before the OJ trial?
Yeah. If the judge was scoring on points on that basis, he would have thrown it out in the conspiracy charge. But he didn't. The judges on Monday believed there was enough evidence for a reasonable jury to find McMahon guilty of conspiring with Zaharian. Later this week, it's up to O'Shea in his closing sermon to establish what he proved and show that the defense failed to offset that proof. It's up to the defense to convince the jury prosecution didn't prove a conspiracy beyond a reasonable doubt. And it's up to the judge to make sure the jury knows exactly what the law is and what level of evidence it would take to find McMahon guilty. It's a court of law, not a hockey game.
Wade is a good writer.
Wade's great. I mean, that's great.
Yeah.
I mean, there's... Then Wade had a whole other deal about the media coverage, which I won't read. It's just really, really good.
Well, I got it. I found the exact Warrior.
And then Bruce Mitchell's column is fantastic on it. Oh, that's a lot.
This, honestly, as far as like full spectrum wrestling news coverage, this might be the best issue of any wrestling newsletter in the history of the medium.
And you know what? And I will not disagree with that. This double issue, The Torch, and it's mainly about the trial. I'm looking here. There is only one page, and it's not really a full page, of non-trial news.
It's pretty much just here's the other stuff we're, you know, that's happened in the last week or so that we'll be catching up on in the next couple issues.
And they never really caught up with it.
Yeah. I mean, other than Bash at the Beach.
Yeah.
But I mean, he did a phenomenal job covering this. His analysis and Bruce's analysis were fantastic. I have no idea how, especially for someone who's like had never really done this before, did such a, I mean, you know, stellar job taking notes on the trial. You know what I mean? On the testimony. I mean, he has a disclaimer that it's not verbatim, but it's true to the content. But still, I mean, that he...
Yeah.
He did a phenomenal job with this. And by the way, the exact Warrior quote is, if you had a chance to get a job, but your boss told you to take off all of your clothes and have mad, passionate sex with him, you would have the personal choice not to. Ultimate Warrior, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
Kevin Wackles, I'm expecting the U.S. government will prove what really happened with steroids and Vincent. How Vince used them to help his business no matter what it did to the health and bodies of his wrestlers. People know I don't have an axe to grind.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't have any problem with this over here.
Rick Rude, I don't need steroids to look good.
So, yeah, I mean...
Everyone go read this.
Go get VIP with a torch for this. It's worth it. It's worth it if you haven't seen it before.
Yeah.
All right. So on that note, we're going to close out this show. Bix, what'd you got to plug for this week?
Flying Spirit Magazine.
Yeah, Herb Abrams.
Yeah, I have a little profile of Herb Abrams in the UWF in there, talking about Davey Meltzer. What else? Herbie Cookies. Let's hear it for the Jews. Baby Oil.
A lot of Jews been mentioned on this show this evening.
Let's hear it for them.
Yes.
So that's in the new Fighting Spirit magazine. That's out now. Jim Cornette's got a thing in there about the first Great American, or about the Great American Bash with the 30th anniversary of the first tour. John Lister's got a Greetings Grapple Fans column about Chris Adams, who we talked about earlier, although Poison Sawad is not mentioned, and lots of other stuff in the new Fighting Spirit magazine. 605 Super Podcast this week, we got part one with Don Leibel, who he had on, who talks about the magazines and which magazines paid well and which did not back in the 80s and stuff, fan club stuff, which ECW wrestler held him hostage. Have you listened to this yet?
I have not listened to the show yet. No, I'm behind from things, a lot of stuff going on. So I got to get caught up on Lucha Reports. Yeah, I've had a busy weekend.
What ECW wrestler do you think held Don Leibel hostage?
What time period were ECW talking about?
I actually don't remember exactly what time period. It's someone who was there for like the last 5 years.
Balls Mahoney.
Very good.
And I'm not listening. I swear, I didn't know.
You're right on this week. You're very on the ball. So that's on there. Also, we already have next week's recorded because of Brian's Hawaiian vacation, which has part two of Don Leibel talking about his friendships with Killer Kowalski, John Studd, Eddie Gilbert. Also, Bob Barnett returning to talk various things, including Dr. Mike Lano. And that's all at 605pod.com.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, I've been behind on Lucha Reports. So I got to get caught up on that. It's going to be a long one tomorrow with all the results.
I hope you don't have to spend too much extra time on Lucha Facebook.
I got some of it done last night. So Lucha Facebook's been pretty calm lately. I think people are finally they finally gotten hip to the game of not clicking on stuff.
As far as spyware.
Yeah, getting your account hacked to have bestiality show up, you know, stuff like that. So
a lot of that was, how much of that was malware and how much of that was people just posting gross stuff?
No, it was not people posting. What it was doing is somebody had clicked on it, and what it does is it sends itself out from that account tagging a whole bunch of people.
Mm.
So we have all the names of people that's tagging out, and that's why you'll see that stuff. So it's been calm lately. I think everybody's pretty much got the message on that. But
well, that's good.
Yeah. So today's Lucha Report, just the show's on Monday, should be up on Deathfly Driver and other places, LuchaWorld.com. So go check that out when it comes out. Next on Bad Street, got some ideas. So be on the lookout for that in the next couple of weeks. See if what we can knock out. there between the sheets. Of course, next week, 2002, first time we go to 2002. And a lot going on that week. The main story being Eric Bischoff debuts on Monday Night Raw. So, yeah, that's going to be a good show, fun show. So go check that out. Of course, we don't have a guest quite yet, but I'm sure that we'll have one suitable for the show if we have a guest. But I think we should have a guest this week, since we went guestless this week. So be on the lookout for
former
that.
Tennessee Titans we can book?
No, but you know, there's a Tennessee Titans deal going on here with early TNA. That's what the fourth TNA show was that week ever.
The first collision. So, no, that was I made that joke already. That's right.
Yes, you made that joke already. So be on the lookout for that. Trying to think of anything else. Really nothing else I have. I'll be at AWE next Sunday in Atlanta for the first time. So if you live in the area and able to go check it out and say hello. I'll be there with the Hales brothers and Frey Movement and some other people from Twitter. Wrestling Twitter will be there. So go check that out. Also, I'll go ahead and flood the CNC Invitational. I'll be there August 6th, but it's August 5th and 6th in suburban Chattanooga. So go check out SCI Tournament on Twitter and get the info there, because there's going to be a lot of wrestling Twitter there. There's going to be many, many people there. Lots of guests on this from this show will be there.
Is wrestling Twitter going to have a gimmick table?
Maybe. I'll be hooking it up with MLJ for sure there between she's guests and other former guests of the show. So go check that out. But then I think we got it this week. So Bix, of course, thank you for being the co-host and making this show possible. Oh, one more thing. Twitter, I guess we got our Twitter accounts, of course, at Chris Zellner, KRISZELLNER, you at David Bix. And our year in anniversary next week will be the 52nd show. So the week after that will be our official year. Restarting up, and we're trying to get a clip show. I know I had somebody send me a request this week for a segment. So,
oh, you didn't send that to me.
Yeah, I was going to tell you after the show. Okay. After we have, you still got a week or two to do it. So, send your message to either one of us wherever you can find us, and
the timestamps, please,
and the show it was on.
Yes.
Let us know what show was on, and we'll try to put the show together. Okay. So
fingers crossed. Fingers crossed.
There's a couple other things too we're talking about for a special show. So be on the lookout for that in the next few weeks. So other than that, thank you for listening as always. Tell somebody else, spread the word. Let's build this thing up. This is Chris saying so long from the Peach State of Georgia.
She's the small wonder, lovely and bright and soft curves. She's a small wonder, a child unlike other girls. She's a miracle, and I grant you, she'll enchant you at her sight. She's the small wonder, and she'll make your heart take flight. La 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 la. She's fantastic, made of plastic, microchips here and there. She's the small wonder, brings love out.